It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now. Yeah.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on a big program, we're going to be talking with Lou Prince, owner of Vintage Vinyl out in St. Louis, Missouri. We're going to be talking about what it takes to run a small business, the tax handouts that the Republicans keep saying that small business absolutely has to have. If we don't extend these $830 billion in handouts to the top 2%, small business will just collapse under the weight of the onerous taxation by those greedy marauders. Well, the reality is the top 2%, they're not your small business people. They're not the folks on Main Street who are providing a job or two to folks in the community. They're not the ones who are trying to eke out an existence. The people who are doing that are true small business owners, people whose name is on the door, people who, when you walk into their establishment, there they are. Those are small business people in my mind, not the Halliburtons, not the Bechtels, not the small businesses that the Republicans seem to care about. And with that, the $830 billion that they want to hand out here in a couple hours, tonight at midnight. The extensions of unemployment benefits end. No more. Gone. Goodbye. So long. Hey, tough luck, buddy. You know, it was nice while we knew you. Good luck under the bridge. At least that's what the Republicans seem to be saying, because they have stood in the way of this. And I really did think that they were going to pass an extension. I really thought that in the 11th hour, something would be passed. Now, I thought there'd be an awful lot of giveaways. So there's, on one hand, I do give credit to the Democrats for not completely caving, but they should be out there screaming about this. The fact that the Republicans have pretty much turned their backs on 2.5 million people by the end of this year, 2.5 million people who will lose their unemployment benefits. They'll lose their ability to put food on the table, lose their ability to feed their families, to pay the electric bill, to look for a job. And today in the next segment, we're talking to a guy named Cal Schumann. He's one of those people who's been laid off for on and off for pretty much the last 2 years. And you'll hear his story. Somebody, you know, a 60-year-old guy who, you know, never thought he'd be in this position. Here you are. And it comes down to jobs. It really does. It comes down to creating jobs. Now, there are two very different schools on this. The Republicans seem to believe they have this blind faith that if we hand out all this money, if we go, here, wealthy, $830 billion, here, please, take it, that the very wealthy, they're going to do something with it. And I would say, yeah, they're going to do something with it, not something that's in the best interest of the country, something that's in the best interest of themselves, which is take that $830 billion dollars that we're going to have to borrow from China and probably investing it in China. I mean, if I'm the Chinese, I'm jumping for joy, going, that's it, dummies. Here, take it. Have some more. Give some more to those wealthy guys so that they can come over here and build factories and build our infrastructure. Because that's what's going on. You don't think this $830 billion is just coming out of thin air. We're going to have to borrow this. This $830 billion isn't sitting in a little pot with a little leprechaun running around. No. We got to borrow that money. It comes from somewhere. And where it comes from are your children. So all the screaming by the T-twizzlers, I don't want to tax my children. Here's a good place to start. Right here. But no. You got these Republicans out there just losing their mind. 2.5 million people by the end of the year. 2.5 million people. And there's no miracle by midnight tonight. It's not going to happen. So those 2.5 million, we're pretty much going to leave them out in the cold. And you know, with unemployment just above 9%, and you got five people looking for every available job, this is an outrage that we would do nothing. And this is the very first time in the last 40 years that unemployment has been this high and Congress has failed to pass even a modest extension. I would say just for 3 months to get us into the next couple of months. But no, can't do that. No. Not good. We got tough love. So in steps Arizona Republican John Shadegg. Out of one side of his mouth, he wants to extend those Bush handouts. Got to help the very wealthy. Got to help them out. And out of the other side of his mouth is basically screw you, tough luck, hope you drop dead and die kind of a mentality. And to me, I got to be honest, his rationale is kind of twisted. In an interview on I think it was on Fox today, this is what he had to say.
Of course, Republicans don't want to tax the job creators because that will bring revenue down.
We don't want to tax the job creators because that will bring revenue down. I'm completely lost there. And you're right. I don't want to tax job creators. He's starting from a frame that is just completely false. I don't want to tax the job creators. In fact, if you're willing to create jobs, you're willing to hire someone, I think we should be giving tax breaks to those folks. Companies that lay people off, companies that shrink and constrict and outsource, those are the people we should be looking at. Those are the folks we should be going after, but, no, we can't do that. No. He goes on to say this as well.
The issue is, do we want to continue to do what the current administration and the current Congress has done?
Do we want to do what the current Congress and the current administration does? You mean save the economy from complete collapse? Yeah, I think that's probably not a bad idea. And slow growth, moving towards some rational end point here, yeah, I think that's not a bad idea. I thought the stimulus should have been much bigger. I thought they should have done much more. But if I'm to hear you guys right, if I'm hearing the Republicans right, the invisible hand, that invisible man's going to take care of it. It'll take care of itself. Don't worry. We'll take care of it. So here's my favorite part of this. My favorite part is this. Listen.
So your answer is it's the spending of money that drives the economy, and I don't think that's right.
I'm going to play that again.
So your answer is it's the spending of money that drives the economy, and I don't think that's right.
The spending of money. Spending of money drives the economy, so you think. I don't think you're right. So if spending money doesn't move an economy, if you don't have consumers buying from small businesses and big businesses, you don't have people buying things, you don't have economic activity, you don't have money changing hands, what kind of an economy do you have? I would argue that you have a very stagnant economy. You would have a dead and dying economy. Because as any business will tell you, as any business owner, and when we talk to Lou Prince, I'm sure he'll be very happy to explain it, if nobody's walking in and buying your product, if nothing's coming off the shelf, you do not stay in business very long. So if people aren't spending money to move the economy along, I mean, just a little, I'm just helping you out here, Mr. Shadegg. If no folks are moving money through their pocket to the store owners, the economy completely collapses. Completely collapses. So the host goes, hey, you know, what do you say to the fact that, you know, by not passing this unemployment benefit, that you're going to harm the economy because, and he uses the line that I've used a number of times, people who are on unemployment, they're going to spend every bit of that $290 to $300 a week that they get on necessities. They need food. They need milk for the kids. They need clothes. They need to pay the bills. Every penny of that goes just to making ends meet, just as existing. Well, Mr. Shadegg, he's got the Tom Corbett mentality. They're living high off the hog out there.
The truth is the unemployed will spend as little of that money as they possibly can.
Yeah, but they don't have a lot. I mean, does that make any sense to you at all?
Absolutely not. The average unemployment is about $300 a week. Does he really think that those who are trying to pay their bills and feed their family aren't going to spend every dollar of that?
But, you know, it comes back to this bizarre mantra that the right has. It comes back to this false belief. I know it's this tax cut mentality that has been proven a failure time and time and time again. But we never seem to learn that lesson. And, you know, we're going to be taking on these handouts. The Bush handouts, I still think, are going to pass. And I think we're going to get stuck with a huge bill just to make happy a couple of people. And at the end of it, I think we're going to get the shaft here. But I think, like Reagan's former budget director, David Stockman, I think, you know, like he said, we need a higher tax burden on the upper income, just like Warren Buffett has said. And he believes that the 2001 Bush tax handouts were totally not needed. But what I found interesting is this statement.
Out into the wilderness, and then when Dick Cheney, who should have known better, in the 201 debate, I think it was, about the Bush first Bush tax cut, it was totally not needed, said, well, Reagan proved that deficits don't matter. Reagan proved nothing of the kind.
Nothing of the kind. You know, and there's this belief out there, Jake. You know, I hear it all the time. Oh, well, you know, Reagan proved that, you know, tax cuts were the panacea, and Reagan proved that tax cuts don't matter, and blah, 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 blah. Reagan just proved. No, Reagan didn't prove any of that. You know what Reagan proved? Reagan proved that there was a huge cookie jar, massive cookie jar, monster cookie jar, with kinds of cookies in it called Social Security money. And he got his hand in there, and he couldn't stop. He was like Winnie the Pooh with the honeypot. Just couldn't get his paws out of it. And they just kept, every time they would take a whole boatload of money out, they put a little piece of paper and say, yeah, we'll pay it back someday. Well, here we are, someday. And they don't want to pay it back. So they sent a little shrub out there with his filing cabinet saying, oh, well, I've seen a little, it's like this with filing cabinets, with nothing but IOUs. Except the IOUs were backed by the full faith and credit of the federal government, their treasury bonds. And they sent Alan Simpson out and say, oh, well, you know, she said, you're the greediest generation, and you America's just a big cow with 310 million teats, and all of you people are sucking off the teats. That's what this deficit commission's about. It's about getting you to go, oh, yeah, we need to tighten our belts more, yeah. At a time when they're talking about giving $830 billion away. I mean, I don't know how much more I can emphasize the fact we're talking about $830 billion that we're going to hand to the top 2%, people who don't need it. And I'm not going to say that they don't deserve it. And if, you know, if things were wonderful and times were grand and it was the Clinton years again, hey, God bless you, buddy. But you know what? Before I've got to tighten my belt and tell my kids I got to take you to the secondhand store to get a pair of shoes, maybe, just maybe, you know, and maybe you might disagree with me, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. If you got a different thought on this, let me know. Before I got to take my kid to the secondhand store to pick up a pair of shoes, I think the guy who's got seven houses like John McCain can't figure out which one to go to. The people who have houses on every different continent folks who've got drivers and all these servants, maybe, you know, cut back their spending just a little. Maybe, you know, just half the cheese on their Whopper, something. I don't know. Anyway, let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Congress sent a message to the long-term jobless on Tuesday. Let them eat cake. Jesse Russell reports.
At midnight last night, nearly 800,000 jobless workers lost a lifeline. The Congress was unable to pass an extension to unemployment benefits, which would have kept those who have been seeking a job for more than 6 months continuing to receive extra help. By the end of December, an estimated 2 million jobless will lose their unemployment insurance. Prior to the Thanksgiving holiday, an effort to stretch the extended unemployment insurance program until February was blocked in the House by Republicans. On Monday, Montana's Democratic Senator Max Baucus introduced legislation that could extend those benefits until the end of next year. Republicans in the Senate have also vowed to block that bill. Economists have been lining up to encourage the Congress and the President to extend the benefits. 34 economists signed onto a letter that said the benefits are good for the economy. A rally is planned in the nation's capital later today that will include Democratic lawmakers, AFL-CIO Treasurer Liz Shuler, and hundreds of unemployed workers. The national unemployment rate is currently 9.6%.
Nations all over the world are coming together in Cancun, Mexico, the first 2 weeks of December, to talk about a global climate solution.
Utility Workers of America Chief of Staff Stuart Acuff on the Global Climate Change Conference underway in Mexico. Acuff says the U.S. has an opportunity to save the planet's environment while also generating millions of green jobs. But the country must seize the opportunity now.
The U.S. has to take the lead in that. And that means investing in what's in the best interest of this country and its people. Investing in renewable and sustainable energy. We no longer have the excuse that there's not the technology. Everybody knows that's BS. We no longer have this excuse that it's not proven science. Everybody knows that's BS. Now we just have the necessity of doing what's in the best interest of the country and the best interest of our people.
Giant pharmacy benefits manager Express Scripts is pushing its SEIU-represented workers for millions of dollars in wage and benefit cuts, even though the company has posted an $850 million profit so far this year. Express Scripts says it would lay off 350 workers and threatened another 650 layoffs if the workers don't cave in to its demands. The workers rejected the company's last and final offer just before the holidays. Now the workers are preparing for a strike or a lockout. The workers have started a fight-back fund and are soliciting donations from labor and community allies to support these workers. Go online to InsideESI.com. This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers, a union of professionals. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Time for change. It's time to rearrange.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say revolution starts now.
Well, I gotta tell you, if this doesn't get passed, if we leave these folks out in the cold, there should be a revolution. Because you're really, honestly and truthfully, when you're talking about giving $830 billion away to the top 2%, and you cannot allow a couple of pennies to drop out of the wealthy folks' pockets to help people that are honestly and truthfully on their last leg to begin with, that says something about our society. It says something about us, I think. And when Max Baucus, Democrat from Montana, is a guy saying, well, we can't allow this to happen. I introduced a bill Monday night that would have extended the benefits through the end of next year, $56 billion. Now, understand, we're going to give $83 billion to the top 2% next year. Understand that. That's important. Because tonight at midnight, all bets are off. The folks who were on that extension, they're not going to be cut off. And, you know, I tell you, I want people to march in the streets. I want people out. And, you know, the worst thing that ever happened in this country was closing the unemployment offices. That was the worst thing that ever happened. Anyway, let's go to the phone lines. I've got Cal Shookman on the line. Cal, welcome to the program.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me on, Rick.
I appreciate you taking time for me. You know, let's just lay out your story for me. Tell me what happened.
Well, let's go background here. I was a former steel worker, and the steel industry went under in the 80s, retrained, and mainly have been doing work, sales work, telemarketing work in the mortgage industry. July of last year, that industry went belly up, and most recently, job that I was laid off from, I was fortunate, blessed, and lucky to have it, and that was doing some phone verification and some bill canvassing work, but I'm currently laid off, currently, again.
You know, I look at this and I go, you steel worker, you went from a job that we actually were producing things, building infrastructure with, had the ability to build things with, from that being retrained to someone who works on the phones, jobs we were told weren't going to go away, the IT jobs, those were the middle class jobs in the next generation. Now those are gone.
Yeah, they've outsourced those jobs. No question about it. I appreciate doing what you're doing here with this extension of the unemployment benefits. I just watched the ABC News, National News, and they showed some folks in recreational vehicles that are moving around the country to where the jobs are. And they've got them currently down in Kentucky because there's some decent paying jobs at $15 an hour down there. But it reminds me of, the grapes of wrath when there was a dust bowl down in Oklahoma and people migrated to California to get jobs. It's a shame what this country's come to where people have to ride around and search for jobs
and
just to put food on the table.
Yeah, and the unfortunate part of this is that, for me, it comes back down to government policy. It comes back down to our insane trade policies and the fact that we've allowed developing nations to walk all over us because we pander to the very wealthy.
That's true. It's unfortunate also when it comes to election time that a lot of us people low income do not get out and vote, especially at a midterm election where the wealthy do. And, of course, that creates the power and the ongoing situation here, which is mainly political. But
yep.
it comes down to you got to get out and vote. That's one of the rights that we have in this country. And that's really the only way we're going to change things. Is to get elected officials represent us, their constituency, instead of the folks with the large amounts of money and power.
Yeah, the
money controlling
this
country.
The money is just the absolute the game changer right there. And you look at this Citizens United case. Not to get way off topic here, but this Citizens United thing just really, I believe, has destroyed our electoral process.
Indeed, it has. It's a shame, too, the amount of money that it takes for our elected officials to win an election this
yep.
day and age. There should be some type of law
I'm right
to
there
bring
with
that
you.
Back into reality.
Let me ask you this, Cal. Let's go back to your situation. How long have you been unemployed since the Great Bush Depression? Well, I call it a depression, but since the Bush recession of 2008.
Well, again, I've been off and on jobs here. You feel fortunate when you get a job, even though it's low paying and it's part time. But I mean, you know, you feel fortunate of having that job, but these jobs are all fleeting. Okay.
Right.
So, you know, it's just off and on. I mean, I could give you a laundry list here of how many jobs I've had.
So you're not the guy that Tom Corbett's talking about that, you know, the jobs are out there, but you're just too lazy, Cal, to go get one.
Well, I think it's a callous statement. I don't think it's facing reality here. I think it was a political statement. We don't want handouts, Rick. What we want are quality jobs. Now show me the jobs. Where are they? Where are the good jobs, meaning that you can support yourself and your family, not just to say I'm working. Obviously, when you're working, it gives you a little bit of pride.
Right.
But on the other hand, minimum wage jobs, part-time, we'll call you when we need you type jobs, you're just basically spinning your wheels. You're not really even supporting yourself.
Yeah, I've often said I can put everybody back to work tomorrow, pay them $1 an hour, and that'd be that. You won't have any kind of an economy, but everybody will be so they'll be employed. They just won't be able to buy anything.
No question about that. And again, the unemployment rate is, it's a lot of the folks out there aren't even kind of because they're underemployed. They're off the record of that. But what it comes down to is people that have put into the system, i.e. have worked and have got laid off, I feel that they deserve to be compensated for that. It's not that they haven't worked until the jobs show up. Now again, we don't want handouts, we want jobs. But
Absolutely.
Until there are jobs, you gotta survive. It's also good for the economy because in a time of recession, these people that do receive unemployment are paying rent, buying food, et cetera, keeping the unemployment from the economy from going under. So to me, it's a no-brainer. It just makes good sense.
I agree.
And also, if you're in law enforcement or anybody's in law enforcement, all you got to do is turn on your radio or television and see the insanely dastardly things that are going on in this economy in America, okay? It's just one thing after another. But I'll give you a quote from my landlord who just recently passed away. He said, you know, I'm an honest guy, but I will rob and steal from you if you back me into a corner and I get hungry enough. So anybody in law enforcement, I could, you know, why would you not want to have these benefits extended to keep people? I mean, the devil works on a man with a hungry stomach.
Yep, and I've said it a number of times. I mean, it's very short-sighted of us not to extend the unemployment because you're going to end up paying for it eventually. If not by giving them food and the ability to have shelter, you're going to put them in jail because, like you said, Christmas is coming, and there will be a Christmas one way or another.
Indeed. It's just a shame that we've come to this in this country. This is the best country in the world to live in. But myself, who's approaching 62 years of age, I just can't believe what's going on out there. And my heart really goes out for the young people today, what they have to face for, you know, jobs, et cetera, just opportunities.
Yeah, it's amazing stuff. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Cal Shookman, unemployed worker. We're talking about unemployment benefits. And, you know, you brought up the fact you're 62 years old. I keep seeing the Cat Food Commission saying, well, we need to push that retirement age off to 69, maybe even further beyond that. And I'm looking, and I got to be honest, Cal, I know a couple of people in your situation. They're late 50s, early 60s, not near retirement age. They're having a bear of a time finding a job, no matter how much outreach they do, no matter how many resumes, no matter applications they put out. It's just not happening for them.
I agree, and I can attest to that also. On my last spot of unemployment here, I saved on my computer all the resumes that I sent out, okay, for jobs. And you know, their jobs are hard to find, but even when you have listings, you don't get a reply at 62. It's a subtle alienation.
Right.
And quite frankly, it's a moral issue here, in my opinion. I realize us baby boomers, there's a lot of us, and we're going to be all heading towards Social Security now, but to raise the Social Security age requirements now is, again, just a moral issue. I think I heard Mr. Trumka from the AFL-CIO quoted as saying, drop dead, basically what they want American society to do. I mean, you should be treated with some dignity when you've worked all your life, when you get retirement age, because, but frankly, you just can't do the things that you used to do when you're younger,
yep.
Even if you keep yourself in good shape and exercise in that.
Yeah, you know, but if you listen to Alan Simpson, when he was talking not too long ago, he said, look, we want to reform Social Security the way it worked like it used to. When we originally set it up, he said, the retirement age was 62, but people only lived to 57. So we need to reform it so it works like it used to, so that you're dead 5 years before you can collect anything. That's his basic, I guess that's his philosophy. That's reform to him.
To me, it's each generation in this country is to improve upon the prior generation. Lifestyle is supposed to be a little bit better. I know that's what my parents thought in the generation before them.
Mine
also
too.
But we're regressing. We're going back in time here to making people work for as low amounts of money as we possibly can for not having them being able to retire. These things are just un-American, quite frankly. They go against everything that our founding fathers have built this country on and for generations have worked for.
You mean the founding fathers weren't in favor of greed and they weren't in favor of a wealth class that, you know, pretty much told unemployed folks to drop dead? You don't think the founders put, wasn't that in part two of the Constitution?
Not to my knowledge. You know, not to my knowledge at all. And quite frankly, again, we've got the best nation in the world, but it's getting out of the constituent hands or the voters' hands of what's going on. There's not even any opportunities for putting your nose to the grindstone, working harder, improving your lot in life. That part of society's gone.
Yeah, well, you've seen that. I mean, you worked those years in the steel mill. That was hard, backbreaking, dangerous work.
Without a doubt.
You know, the retraining that they gave you was a service industry job. Because I've got tons of friends who went through the exact same thing. I grew up in Cleveland. When the steel mills were shuttered there, those folks were, you know, oh, here's an IT job that a couple years later went away. You know, to me, it comes back to the insanity of our trade policies.
The playing field needs to be leveled so we can get some of our goods in these other countries. If it's just an unlevel playing field, how are we supposed to survive? And I say this about American workers. We're the best workers in the world. We're the most resilient workers in the world, but we're not good at standing on corners with our hands in our pocket because our job's been outsourced. And it's just, again, it's a vicious circle. Your social programs, your communities are going to flourish. Your churches are going to flourish. They are not going to flourish when we're unemployed. It's just crime on top of crime. And basically, blue-collar working people in Pittsburgh, where I was born and raised, it's a friendly town. And, you know, people are generally friendly, unless, of course, you back them into a wall. They're hungry and are competing for jobs and there are no jobs. Then people, you know, become, you know, the worst side of them comes out.
Yep. Yeah, and that's what I fear coming. And that's what I really thought the Tea Party thing was. I said early on I could have easily been one of the Tea Party people. I was angry. I was ticked off. Everything that they told me, you know, if I work hard, I'll succeed. If I put money into my 401k, I'll be able to retire as a millionaire. None of that stuff worked out to be true. But when the Tea Party started turning and saying, well, it's the evil government, it's the corporate entities and these multinationals that are screwing us blind, I said, well, let me back away from you guys right now.
I agree, and there's a backlash out there. But what's going on is nothing new. I do some music work for a radio talk show here, volunteer work, and researching labor music, et cetera, history, this is nothing new here. What's going on in this country, it's kind of like a shell game where if you convince people that they're not happy out there, but get the vote for the wrong party and espouse the wrong ideals, well, you know, it just perpetuates. And it's not a good situation. It's not a healthy situation.
Not at all. Let me ask you, you know, Tom Corbett said, you know, people are sitting on their behinds. They're not going out there looking for work. How many applications, and I've got a friend who's put out hundreds, he's told me, put out hundreds of applications, resumes, applications, the whole nine yards. I'm curious, in your time off, do you have a general number of how many times you've reached out?
I have in the 50s now. Again, this is not from my most recent layoff, because this has happened to most recent layoff was in November, but my last layoff last July, when I was off from July for a couple of months, I had over 50 resumes sent out. Okay, I went to a local organization here in Pittsburgh, North Hills Community Outreach. They gave me the software that I could attach a resume and send it out for these various job applications. But there are well over 50 that I have sent out. And quite frankly, let the worker beware out there, too, because a lot of these jobs, and I don't mean to be putting down Craigslist because it's a great feature out there, but a lot of these are just scams that already don't even have jobs. They just want your information so they can cross-sell it and prey upon your misfortunes.
Yeah, it's amazing, amazing stuff. And let me ask you this. As you're moving forward this, I keep hearing this theme from the right that, well, you know, the money that we give to the unemployed, you know, they don't really spend it on things. They try and save some of it. I'm curious, of the money that you get, how much of it do you actually put in the bank and save for a rainy day?
There's not too much for saving. I'm a very frugal guy. I always say this, before I spend a dollar, that eagle's got a grin. Okay. I basically buy food and necessities, gasoline, things of that nature.
No vacations, no Bahamas,
no
Hawaii?
That's the thing of the past, unfortunately. I do try to keep myself healthy, though. My philosophy is this: since healthcare is so high, I'm getting on in age, the best thing for me to do is to stay healthy, eat a good diet, okay, and exercise. That's my philosophy.
Right. Do you have any kids, married, anything like that?
I have a couple daughters. I'm a single guy now, but a couple girls, yes.
I mean, just because, you know, a lot of people that some of my friends, they've got small children, and they're trying to make ends meet on $310 a week. Ain't happening. Not too easy anyway.
No, and I saw that on my most recent job where I see husband and wife both unemployed with two children, okay? And you could tell these people want to work and would make good employees and good workers, okay, if given the opportunity. But that's the part that really hurts. When you see them where with the mouths to feed besides their own.
Yeah, and that's the message that should be out there. There are people who want to work.
Well, there's no question about that. I don't think anybody's living high off the hog here.
You mean they're not driving around with the welfare queen and the guy who lost his family farm?
Not in my opinion, sir. Not in my opinion. I mean, if you look in some places, there's always somebody that's going to abuse whatever, okay?
Right.
But the majority of people are making ends meet. Okay?
They're existing.
Just exactly, surviving.
Cal, I appreciate your time, and thank you for your sharing your story with us. I greatly appreciate it.
My pleasure, Rick. Thanks for having me on. Wish you the best, sir.
Thanks so much. Cal Shookman, appreciate the time. We're going to take a quick break. Back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
We can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
Several of America's top high-tech giants are now breaking with conventional thinking on the offshoring of their factories and jobs, asking a heretofore unthinkable question. Who needs China? Let's invest in new state-of-the-art factories, they declare excitedly. We'll launch a bold new initiative to train tens of thousands of teachers who, in turn, will educate the high-tech workforce of the future, generating a wave of jobs and making our American corporations the most competitive in the world. Wow, what a vision, what a boost to America's middle-class possibilities. America? Who said anything about the USA? No, the high-tech powerhouses are not decamping from China to reinvest in our country, but to shift their production to Vietnam. It seems that the millionaire chieftains of Silicon Valley now deem the price of low-wage workers in China to be too high, and their wandering eyes have settled on Vietnam, where the per capita income is less than half that of the Chinese people. Thus, on October 29th, the CEO of Intel stood in a packed auditorium in Ho Chi Minh City and hollered out, "Hello, Vietnam!" He was there for the dedication of Intel's sparkling billion-dollar chip factory, which has a clean room the size of 5 football fields and employs 4,000 workers. Also, Intel is trying to realign Vietnam's educational system to be more corporate-friendly, pouring money into the training of 87,000 teachers. This is Jim Hightower saying, Hewlett-Packard is another world wanderer moving to Vietnam, having built a facility there for outsourcing its software engineering work. Wouldn't it be nice in these times of middle-class decline in our United States of America if the high-tech honchos who benefit so lavishly from our country were to move more of their investments and jobs here?
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current. Even a dead fish can go with the flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
Radio of, for, and by We the Working People. The Rick Smith Show.
Well, the one good thing I guess you could say is, you know, last Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving, came a little early. The hammer there, Tom DeLay, will be seeing himself in pinstripes in the Gray Bar Hotel. And you know what? Guess what? He is going to have free government-provided health care for life, especially if the judge gives him life, which I'm kind of hoping for. I'm not going to lie to you. Kind of hoping for that. Actually, I'm hoping for life for this guy, too. A New Mexico man, the AP reports, pleaded not guilty on Monday to federal hate crime charges in a case of a mentally disabled Navajo man who had been had a swastika branded on his arm with a hot metal clothes hanger. William Hatch, 29, of Fruitland, New Mexico, and two other defendants are the first to be prosecuted by the federal government under the historic 2009 law triggering hate crimes involving disabilities and sexual orientation. See, these nitwits got the bright idea that they saw this kid who, not a kid, he was, you know, 22 years old, you know, that he was disabled, you know, not too swift on his feet. So they used a marker to write KKK and white power on the back of his head. And then they decide, hey, wouldn't it be a great idea if we took this coat hanger and we made it look like a swastika and we burned it on this guy's arm? Wouldn't that be a great idea? They face up to 10 years in prison, which I think should be much longer. What would make someone do something like that?
That, you know, those kind of crazy people.
See, but here's
been the thing. Around forever.
When you start ramping up this hatred of others, when you start ramping up this hatred, which the right is famous for, this is the kind of stuff you get. You get the single-digit IQ'd nitwits who go, oh, let's get a coat hanger heated up. And this is the kind of stuff you get. And speaking of low-digit IQs. You ever heard of a guy named Joe Barton, Republican from Texas? You know, the guy who was just effusive with praise and apology to the BP CEO. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. BP CEO. We didn't mean to ask you to pay for the mess you created. I'm sorry, Mr. CEO. We done shook you down. Yeah, by expecting them to pay for the mess that they made. Anyway, he said, and, you know, again, it's one of those things that make you shake your head. He wrote in one of these things, put anything in my scope and I will shoot it. He was talking about the Obama administration. And I understand, Barton is the former chairman of the House Energy and Commerce Committee, something he wanted to do again. And this may have harmed his chances. And, you know, I look at this kind of stuff and I go, this is the kind of, you know, I don't know. This is the kind of stuff that frightens me. That you have this war mentality that the right has taken on against the Obama administration. And anything progressive, any policies that are going to help people. This is the mentality of the folks on the right. And what bothers me is you got Obama who's, well, we got to reach out and we got to help. We got to work together with the Republicans. I'm sorry. That didn't work. It's not going to work. They had their little meeting, their little Slurpee summit, I guess, where they then came out after 2 hours, supposed to last a half a day, maybe into dinner, they said. Half a day, for sure. Maybe into dinner. Lasted 2 hours. They came out and said the same thing we all knew. We had very differing opinions. We had a civil meeting, though, and that's it. And that's what we're going to get for the next 2 years.
I saw the Republicans after the meeting with the president. I was kind of surprised. I think they spun it as well as they could have. They were basically saying, well, you know, the president's willing to sit down and talk, but when they're willing to compromise, I'll believe that when I see it. And I'm not so sure they're still willing to compromise.
Well, the Republicans aren't willing to compromise. Come on, when have they ever been willing to compromise? Compromise to the far right, to these extremists who are going to take over the House. Compromise to them is do what we tell you to do, and we'll call that a compromise.
Well, on whether now here's where the Tea Party backed candidates, the ones who are the hardcore, they're coming here, and many of them don't like government. Well, you know, but here's the key. The art of passing legislation, in the end, is the art of compromise. It's the art of compromise. If you're gonna say, well, we have this position, we're not gonna change, we're not willing to compromise, we're not willing to look at logical compromise, nothing's gonna get done. And you, in fact, are gonna be ineffective. you are going to eventually be written off.
That's the that's their point. The point is, and this is what they're telling you: this, they're going to gridlock our government. They're going to stall. They're going to delay. They're going to obstruct, just like they've been doing for the last 2 years. And why? Because then you make government ineffective. You make them weak. And if you can do that, then private corporations can take over. The people who fund their campaigns. The folks who fill their pockets. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about what I think Obama should be doing and the stances he should be taking. And we'll go through this Elliot Spitzer piece that kind of answers the same question. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
I'm David Thillman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Everybody, everybody, let's get into it. Get stoned, get it started, get it started, get it started. Let's get it started. Let's get it started in here. Let's get it started.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, now's the time to get started. I mean, this president, he's got, he doesn't have much time left. You got 2 years. And then in the next year really is it, because re-election starts a year before it's supposed to start. So you've got really about 1 year, 9-10 months to show the American people that you got a backbone, that you've had a spinal transplant, and you're willing to stand up to these folks. Because I got to be honest with you, the midterms were how long ago? Several weeks. I haven't heard one major speech from him about the direction he plans to take. I've heard really nothing. I mean, there have been a couple little press conferences, but hey, 8 o'clock one night, get on the TV and say, hey, look, you know, this is what happened. This is where we're going. This is what I expect. Rally the people. I mean, you know, you gotta keep talking to people. It's about communicating. I mean, the old saying, communicate or die. You got to do something here, man. And I'm looking at the reality of what's going on in the world and what's going on in this country. And we need a solid leader. And he better be it. Because the reality is, we cannot continue to be distracted from what's in front of us. And what's in front of us is, you got the whole North and South Korea thing. You got the whole China thing. And while we're bickering and squabbling amongst ourselves, and this WikiLeaks thing that we'll talk about later with Iran, there are a lot of problems. And what you're getting from the Republicans, the recalcitrant Republicans, is you know, like a petulant two-year-old, fingers in the ears, kicking the feet. And we're being distracted. We should be united around what binds us, which I think is job creation. And job creation starts by bringing industry back. And you know what? If I've got to tax the hell out of somebody who leaves the country and makes their product in China and wants to ship it back, that's what we do. That's what we do. You know, one of the things I want to hear the president say is, you know what? We need to renegotiate our trade policies like he did on the campaign trail. That's all I want. Talk about that. And get us the heck out of Iraq and Afghanistan completely. That's not where terrorism is being fought anymore. And we're going to fight terrorism. We're going to fight this thing. But the problem is when you're talking about intolerance and fundamentalism, which the right is famous for, you're talking about other nations being just as intolerant and just as fundamentalist. For me, you got to get out of there. Let Karzai's government collapse, if that's what it's going to take, because it's corrupt. I've seen it described as corruption Disneyland, because it is that corrupt. One of the senior guys in his cabinet was able to flee Afghanistan and get into Dubai with something like $56 million in a bag. You and I, we can't get through the airport with a tube of toothpaste. Yet this guy can get through with a satchel of American money, $56 million in a bag. He can walk right through. Where's the TSA when we need him then? Where's the strip shirts? Where's the groping? But boy, I sure can't have I can't have 3.5 ounces of mouthwash. No, can't have that. We need the ratification of the START Treaty. Gotta happen. Get rid of, who cares about don't ask, don't tell? Gates has already said, look, it's not going to make any difference. We need to extend the middle class tax cuts. Only the middle class tax cuts. Only. Sorry, rich folks. I know you'd like to have a seventh or an eighth or a tenth home. Not going to happen. Because we at the bottom would like to keep our first home. And we need to extend unemployment benefits. Pure and simple. We need to go to the WTO and we need to charge China with currency manipulation. It has to happen. We already know that. And there are so many things that we should be doing. So many things we should be doing. But instead, what we're going to do is we're going to bicker, we're going to fight, and nothing is going to get done for the next 2 years. Because trust me when I'm telling you this, the Chinese are not playing. They're not playing games. They want your lunch. They want, in fact, they don't want just your lunch. They want the bag. They want the satchel that you brought it in. They want the table you're going to eat it on, the chair you're going to sit your behind on, the building that you're sitting at the table on, the chair. They want it all. And if we keep this up, they'll get it. Because we're stupid. Because we keep saying, oh, here's $830 billion. Oh, please take it. And do with it. Because the wealthy always do what's in the best interest of the country, don't they, Jake? Always in the best interest, because if we give them money, we do know that it trickles down on top of us.
It's absolutely, totally untrue. But, and again, Rick, the Democrats have done one lousy job. They've taken the position of, you know, who would believe that? Well, you know, there are a lot of Americans, first of all, that don't understand economics that would believe it. But beyond that, there's a lot of Americans who would believe you if you said, look, that doesn't work and this is why. A, B, C, and D. These are the economic realities. The tax breaks for the wealthy didn't work. But the Democrats didn't pound them enough. They did not do a good enough job getting out there. And when the Republicans were out there lying to the American people, they should have been on the air, not the next day, within the hour, refuting that kind of BS. But they did not. And that's part of the problem. And you know, and I know, Rick, that most Americans are not like you and I. We don't every day stay on top of it. Most Americans, you know, go through their lives and they hear a little bit of information here and they hear a little bit of information there. And the old Goebbels philosophy, the old propaganda minister of the Nazis in Germany, his philosophy was, if you tell a lie long enough and loud enough, people will believe. And that's exactly what's happened with a lot of Americans. They believe it because they haven't, they've heard it time and time and time and time again, reinforced, and they believe it, and it's an absolute untrue.
Yeah. Let's go to the phone lines. Got Jerry on line one. How are we doing tonight, Jerry?
This is Gary. Pretty good, Rick. Pleasure to speak with you. Watching you online here, I wrote to you a few months ago in regards to living up in the upstate New York area. Hopefully we could get your show up this way on one of the local radio stations, but people up our way tend to be, shall we say, lean to the right pretty heavily, and that wasn't an option for the radio stations in our area, but I'm glad I'm having this opportunity to chat with you this evening.
Yeah, I appreciate you taking the time. Sure. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, your conversation is the same conversation I've had with people up in our area time and time again. We're coming to a standstill. I mean, the term gridlock is been used and overused. It's politics as usual. It's nobody willing to come to some conclusion for the betterment of the nation as opposed to the betterment of themselves. And I'm, I look at the Tea Party folks and what initially they stand for, and I don't know that I have problems with what they initially stand for.
I'm right there with you.
But I do have some.
Where they ended up.
The road took a lot of twists and turns somewhere. And I don't know if it's this president. I hoped it was. I still hope that it is. I know it wasn't the last one, and it hasn't been a lot of them up to this point. We've got to set politics aside, and I don't think we can do it. I'm really scared for this country, and I'm really scared for my kids. I've got a 23-year-old who just came home, who's just got laid off from a job that he thought he was going to have for a very long time as a college graduate, and I myself have been laid off. It's a scary time to live in. It's a scary time for me at my end of my life. I'm in my early 60s. My son's in his early 20s. I'm kind of ended my work life. He's just kind of starting out, but it doesn't seem to be any different for either end of the workforce.
The unfortunate part of it is, and as I go back to time and time again, it's the fact that we've given so much of our country's wealth away to the very top, who have taken that money and invested it abroad because there's greater return there.
Absolutely.
With that revenue went our jobs.
Yeah.
And until we can do something with that, I think it's a lost game. So this argument about deficits to me is really kind of stupid. The deficit I worry about is our trade deficit.
That's a pretty scary number that continues to get larger and larger all the time.
Yep.
Boy, I'd really like to be able to walk into one of our local shopping centers and find something that says Made in the USA on it, as opposed to a trip through a geography lesson.
Yeah, you know,
there are countries that are I found out that there are more countries in this world than I ever knew. Just look at the labels on some of the clothes that are being shipped into this nation.
Yeah, I take a map. When I go clothes shopping with my daughter, we take a map and try and find the countries.
Yeah, absolutely.
Might as well get some education out of it. I'm looking for a car right now. I try and find an American-made car that has a component rating above 70.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible.
It's a very difficult task. It is indeed. But that's I think, the overall point to my comments here tonight, is that the politics has to be set aside. We need to get this nation on track first, and I'm all for helping other nations of the world, but, you know, take care of ourselves. You can find those wanted, hollowed eyes of kids that we ask to give donations to from all over the world. You can find those right here in this country.
Yep.
And you can find people who have worked their lives who end up in the same predicament of no money and no place to live and being homeless because of politics, not because our American workforce isn't prepared to work. It's because of how this nation is being run. And I will say how this nation is being run kind of on both sides of the aisle.
I agree with you, Gary.
So I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you tonight.
Thanks so much. Call again.
You betcha. Take care, gentlemen.
Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break right here. We're right back with Lou Prince, owner of Vintage Vinyl. Stick around.
In an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Congress sent a message to the long-term jobless on Tuesday. Let them eat cake. Jesse Russell reports.
At midnight last night, nearly 800,000 jobless workers lost a lifeline. The Congress was unable to pass an extension to unemployment benefits, which would have kept those who have been seeking a job for more than 6 months continuing to receive extra help. By the end of December, an estimated 2 million jobless will lose their unemployment insurance. Prior to the Thanksgiving holiday, an effort to stretch the extended unemployment insurance program until February was blocked in the House by Republicans. On Monday, Montana's Democratic Senator Max Baucus introduced legislation that could extend those benefits until the end of next year. Republicans in the Senate have also vowed to block that bill. Economists have been lining up to encourage the Congress and President to extend the benefits. 34 economists signed onto a letter that said the benefits are good for the economy. A rally is planned in the nation's capital later today that will include Democratic lawmakers, AFL-CIO Treasurer Liz Shuler, and hundreds of unemployed workers. The national unemployment rate is currently 9.6%.
Nations all over the world are coming together in Cancun, Mexico, the first 2 weeks of December, to talk about a global climate solution.
Utility Workers of America Chief of Staff Stuart Acuff on the Global Climate Change Conference underway in Mexico. Acuff says the U.S. has an opportunity to save the planet's environment while also generating millions of green jobs. But the country must seize the opportunity now.
The U.S. has to take the lead in that, and that means investing in what's in the best interest of this country and its people, investing in renewable and sustainable energy. We no longer have the excuse that there's not the technology, that everybody knows that's BS. We no longer have this excuse that it's not proven science. Everybody knows that's BS. Now we just have the necessity of doing what's in the best interest of the country and the best interest of our people.
Giant pharmacy benefits manager Express Scripts is pushing its SEIU-represented workers for millions of dollars in wage and benefit cuts, even though the company has posted an $850 million profit so far this year. Express Scripts says it would lay off 350 workers and threatened another 650 layoffs if the workers don't cave in to its demands. The workers rejected the company's last and final offer just before the holidays. Now the workers are preparing for a strike or a lockout. The workers have started a fight-back fund and are soliciting donations from labor and community allies. To support these workers, go online to InsideESI.com. This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers, a union of professionals. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Your proud defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
I just can't get it out of my head. I can't get this statement by this John Shadegg, Republican representative from Arizona. It's kind of stuck there. This idea that, well, here it is again.
So your answer is it's the spending of money that drives the economy, and I don't think that's right.
I got to be honest. The more I think about him saying that, how dead wrong he possibly, how much more wrong could he possibly be? It's just mind blowing. Anyway, I've got Lou Prince on the phone. He's managing partner of Vintage Vinyl, one of my favorite record stores. The website, vintagevinyl.com. Great place. Lou, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great. You know, I listened to this guy, this representative from Arizona saying, so your answer is to spend money. Spending money drives the economy, huh? I think that's how we drive an economy, right?
And there are two things that drive the economy. One is consumer spending, and the other is the productive power of working people. That the consumer spending creates jobs, and the productive power of working people creates new products and new ideas and improvements that create a stronger economy. In America, we can export to other countries with products that we can export.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm listening to the right wing right now because they're going to be in charge. I listen to them touting their philosophy, and I cannot imagine people voting for these folks because they're just flat wrong. The idea that we hand $830 billion to the top 2%, but we can't afford to extend unemployment to me is just mind-numbing.
It is. 3.3 million people were kept out of poverty this year by unemployment benefits. A million of them were kids. Unemployment benefits immediately stimulate the economy. People put them in their pocket and they pay the heat bill. They put gas in the car. They don't have to worry as much about where the next meal is coming from. And Congress playing chicken with people's lives is beyond awful. Beyond cruel.
I got to be honest. You know, I did think that it was going to pass. Honestly and believe that the last minute the Republicans would come to their senses and say, okay, we'll let it pass, but you're going to have to give us a pound of flesh. And that pound of flesh would have been, you give us the $830 billion for our people, and we'll give you the $12 billion for yours.
Well, you know what's hilarious about this, actually? Hilarious, ironically, is that number, that 80-something billion a year, that would come back into the federal coffers would more than cover these unemployment benefits. That a year of unemployment benefits cost about $16.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to me.
Well, I think it's appalling, and I think we all have to organize. We all have to be writing our congresspeople. We all have to be in the streets. We all have to be writing letters to the newspapers and op-eds and blogs on the web. This is how popular movements get started, is clear injustices, clear stupidity and greed driving government need to be opposed by people who know better.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And for me, it comes down to how do we get these people out? How do we, you know, the last time I was unemployed and the last time I was seriously unemployed was 1991, the last time Bush was in the White House. I had to go to the unemployment office and be with other people like me. There was a place for us to go. Now, it almost seems, you know, as my producer told me, it almost seems like the unemployed today are the AIDS victims of the 80s, where they were just completely shunned and everyone ran away from them.
Wow. I've never thought of it that way. It seems to me that the unemployed are the people who are being left behind by those of us who are just scuffling to get to stay where we are, and being stepped on by Republican legislators and wealthy investors who got theirs in the bailouts and in the Recovery Act, and now don't want to share it. Just share it with normal, average working people who are trying to make ends meet, who are just trying to get a job. You know, there are 5 unemployed people in America for every job opening. It's not like people are not taking the jobs that are out there.
Well, we talked to a guy here a little earlier in the program who is unemployed, has been looking. He said he sent out 50 resumes. I know people who sent out twice that many.
Oh, yeah.
It's just not there.
Yeah, the jobs aren't there. And, you know, I was just listening to the newscast on it right before you came on about the Express Scripts story. Express Scripts is a company that's maybe a mile and a half from here. And I know a lot of people who work there. This is a company that shows record profits every quarter.
Yep.
And the people who work there are telling me that this company is threatening to fire them because they won't work overtime, or they won't work overtime for free, or they won't work on holidays without time and a half. And this is what happens when companies don't have unions, aren't organized, and are in states that have right-to-work laws. You know, Missouri, it's hire at will and fire at will.
Yeah, and that's what worries me. Pennsylvania, with the Republicans in complete control here, the talk is Pennsylvania could be the first northeastern state to become a right-to-work state.
I'm telling you, it is a form of slavery. I'm stunned. You know, in most states that have closed shop laws, you have to really have a reason to get rid of a worker.
Yeah.
In Missouri, which is a right-to-work state, basically you can just say you're gone. The worker has no appeal, no rights, no legal way.
Well, that's how Pennsylvania is. If you don't have a union, this is an at-will state.
Wow.
It's an at-will state. Yeah. If you're not under contract, you can come in tomorrow, and they don't even have to give you a reason. Sorry, Lou. It was nice knowing you. Have a good day.
Yeah.
As long as they don't violate a federal, right. you old so-and-so, get out the door, or hey,
right.
You this color, race, color, creed, any of that stuff, they're all right.
I hear you.
It's amazing stuff to me. Let me ask you this, going back to the reason I asked you on the program.
Mm-hmm.
This whole Bush tax handouts, I keep hearing the right saying, well, you know, if we don't extend these to the top 2%, you know, people making over $250,000 a year, if we don't give it to them, small businesses are going to be harmed.
You know, the notion that tax cuts for the rich will trickle down and help the economy, by helping small business in particular, but will help the economy at all, is like saying if you pour gasoline on the hood of your car, it'll make it start easier. it's completely insane. And it's backwards. Small businesses don't hire people because they get a tax break. If a business gets a tax break and a big businessman ends up taking home a little more, he takes it to Aruba. A small businessman doesn't make extra money from a tax break. You know, basically, I'm a salaried employee of my company. Okay, and if it makes a little more, most of the time I'm going to invest a little bit more. But what really happens is the way I create a job is I get a new idea or a new service or a new product where I think, oh, I can sell a few more of these, but I'm going to need somebody on the floor who's trained to do this. So I go out and I find someone and I hire them and I train them and I put them on the floor. And the way capitalism works is all of that, and the way our tax system works is all of that is pre-tax money. In other words, the most money I can save on taxes is by creating a job, not by getting a tax cut. Because all of the costs of creating that job come off of that top, the line that goes into expenses. And when the Republicans say this, and when the Chamber of Commerce says this, that it will help create jobs, they've got it completely backwards. That nobody creates jobs because he has extra money. You only create jobs because you have extra business.
Right. And it goes back to the frame that I hear from a lot of my former coworkers, people I've known through the years who are just grateful that the boss gave them a job. And I try to explain to them, nobody gave you
right.
a job.
Right.
What they did is they gave you the opportunity for them to make money off of you.
That's right.
And any smart capitalist, that's what he's going to do.
That's it.
Now
yes.
you have to say, hey, I'm going to make a living and I'm willing to sell my labor price so I can support my family.
Right. And my job as the business owner is to figure what rate I can pay you to create the most value for my money.
Right.
In other words, okay, I need to get someone who, for my job, I need to have someone who's educated and articulate and intelligent and willing. And I need to figure out how much value he can create in my store and pay him the percentage of that will get him in the door. It's all sharecropping, man, in the end.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at the end of it, you still need, as you pointed out, I need somebody who can read and write and do a little math and all of that stuff. So it means you need an education system. So we need to be funding education as
well. Exactly. And these Republican legislators who want to starve government, they're not sending their kids to public school. They don't see what's going on. I'm at the other end of that labor pool. And, you know, I run a record store. One of the real basic things we need to do is alphabetize things.
Yep.
And when I see my younger customers are having, not my employees, but my customers are having trouble with the alphabet, then I know that the school system is failing them. And these legislatures who want to cut taxes, are starting to cut at the core of that, the core of the educational system, the core of the legal system, the core of all the systems that keep our society running and moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. And you know,
taxes pay for infrastructure. That's what they do.
Yeah, I've never seen a tax cut build a bridge.
Exactly.
I have seen quite a few bridges built because we the people decided, you know what, we need a bridge. Here's our tax dollars. Please build that.
You know, even Adam Smith, who is the great theoretical god of, you know, of Reagan republicanism, said two amazing things that these guys never quote. One is that people should pay taxes in proportion to the amount of money they get out of the economy. That's justice. And the other thing he said is that the people who should be regulated and taxed the most are bankers.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, this is a guy in the 18th century.
Okay. Things have not changed.
Right. And this is the guy that these Republican economists consider the end-all and be-all. I mean, they don't really look at anybody, tax him, except for his disciples, you know, from the Chicago School, the Milton Friedman guys.
And they're the ones who, you know, like any televangelist, they pick and choose their quotes.
Yeah.
I mean, you can read the Bible and twist it any way you want, just like you can read Adam Smith or Moby Dick, for that matter.
Yeah. The whaling industry, there was an industry that we missed, man.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Lou Prince. He is the owner of Vintage Vinyl. The website, vintagevinyl.com. Last question I've got for you. You know, as we move forward, I'm curious what your thoughts are on this. Do you think we're going to hand this big chunk of change away, along with the estate tax that I think is coming down the pike?
I sure hope not. It's really clear that in the last election, the huge, you know, Tea Party message was fiscal responsibility. I mean, I really think that if those people were about anything, that's it. And the first and most fiscally responsible thing that Congress can do is repeal the tax cuts to the rich, return the estate tax back to where it was when it was 55% and on everything over $1 million, which will cut the federal deficit by, as you put it, well over $800 billion. Well, just the income tax portion will cut it that much, and the estate tax portion I think is another $35 or $40 billion over 10 years. It's not a tremendous amount of money, but in terms of the deficit, it is. It cuts the deficit from over $13.7 billion to well under 12, and starts pushing it toward 10, because that money back in the economy will have a multiplier effect. You know, the Congressional Budget Office came out with a thing this week, a report on the 11 proposals in Congress to stimulate the economy, and they said the single bill in front of Congress that would stimulate it the most is extending unemployment benefits.
Yeah.
Because the unemployed have to spend almost every penny. They create more than $1.90 in velocity to that money, and they will create jobs that money. That over 1 million jobs have been created in the last year on money, on unemployment benefits that have been put into the economy, and that if those benefits are taken out of the economy, 700,000 jobs will go away in the next year. That unemployment will actually get worse.
Yeah, and I got to be honest, there's part of me that thinks that's what the Republicans want. You know, they like pain, because out of that, then out of that pain and chaos, I believe the corporate masters will then take over.
Well, you know, we have the best Congress money can buy, and if you take a look at...
And the best Supreme Court.
Oh, yeah. And what that Supreme Court did was allow all of this money that then came from us, that our bailout money, ended up being gigantic checks for guys in the banking industry who then poured it back into these Republican political action committees, which ended up trashing us in the last election. I mean, we're funding our own demise.
Yep. I've always said, you know, the thing is we gave the banks a whole bunch of money in the hope that we gave them our money in the hopes that they'd lend it back to us. And they're not even doing that.
I could tell you so.
I'll tell you how crazy we are. Lou Prince, I appreciate your time. Managing partners of Vintage Vinyl, vintagevinyl.com. Always great talking to you.
Thanks, man. Same here.
Look forward to having you back again. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
Several of America's top high-tech giants are now breaking with conventional thinking on the offshoring of their factories and jobs, asking a heretofore unthinkable question. Who needs China? Let's invest in new state-of-the-art factories, they declare excitedly. We'll launch a bold new initiative to train tens of thousands of teachers who, in turn, will educate the high-tech workforce of the future, generating a wave of jobs and making our American corporations the most competitive in the world. Wow, what a vision, what a boost to America's middle-class possibilities. America? Who said anything about the USA? No, the high-tech powerhouses are not decamping from China to reinvest in our country, but to shift their production to Vietnam. It seems that the millionaire chieftains of Silicon Valley now deem the price of low-wage workers in China to be too high, and their wandering eyes have settled on Vietnam, where the per capita income is less than half that of the Chinese people. Thus, on October 29th, the CEO of Intel stood in a packed auditorium in Ho Chi Minh City and hollered out, "Hello, Vietnam!" He was there for the dedication of Intel's sparkling billion-dollar chip factory, which has a clean room the size of 5 football fields and employs 4,000 workers. Also, Intel is trying to realign Vietnam's educational system to be more corporate-friendly, pouring money into the training of 87,000 teachers. This is Jim Hightower saying, Hewlett-Packard is another world wanderer moving to Vietnam, having built a facility there for outsourcing its software engineering work. Wouldn't it be nice in these times of middle-class decline in our United States of America if the high-tech honchos who benefit so lavishly from our country were to move more of their investments and jobs here?
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow. Now available wherever books
are. Making the blue blood see red.
The Rick Smith Show.
You know, if you go through the naked scanner, you go through the porno scanner, you know somebody's watching. You know somebody's watching, and you know who knows what they're doing. I gotta be honest with you. That to me, it's an amazing. It was amazing watching the right wing try and figure out how to deal with that issue, especially since that's the world they want. That's the end result of their philosophy. That's their end game, and yet here they're against it. And as I said from the beginning, you know, what they wanted is they wanted those strip searches and that humiliation and that iron fist on those people. Not on me. On those people. And it turned around and it bit them in the behind. And now what do you do? Anyway, the Borowitz report on the TSA, which I love, amid growing public outrage over the conduct of airport security in the U.S., the Department of Homeland Security today transferred all of its responsibilities for screening passengers from the TSA to TMZ, the popular celebrity gossip website. And in announcing the change, Homeland Security Chief Janet Napolitano said, "We believe that TMZ can do the same job that TSA did, but they'll be less invasive and more respectful." Effective immediately, TSA personnel will be replaced by the nation at the nation's airports by camera wielding TMZ paparazzi who will attempt to take the most revealing photos of passengers possible. Additionally, TMZ said it would expand the so-called Homeland Security watch list to include the names of celebrities such as Lindsay Lohan, Charlie Sheen, and Mel Gibson. For years, TMZ cameras have been trained on the celebrities' underpants, whether they're wearing them or not, said TMZ founder Harvey Levine. This should be just another day at the office for us. Mr. Levine said he hoped the airport assignment could lead to larger national security role for TMZ. Quote, if we use the same energy that we put in to spotting Jake Gyllenhaal with Taylor Swift, we'd have Bin Laden by now. In other security news, Secretary of State Clinton called WikiLeaks the most serious invasion of privacy since Facebook. And you gotta love the Borowitz report. And that's satire. It's not like Fox News taking something from The Onion and reporting it as actual news. Which, you know, time or time again, you know, they've been known to do. But, that's satire. But you know, this whole thing with the screeners. I go back to my original thought. Just fly naked. That's the answer. And nobody really wants to fess up to it. Nobody wants to realize that the answer is just get over the whole vanity thing. Bring your little whatever and fly naked.
Well, at the end of the day, I mean, you joke about it. It can happen. You and I both never. You should never say never.
No, it's never going
to happen. But I am saying this. Mark this down on our show. The 30th of November, 2010. That will never happen. Now, on a serious note, which way do we go? I agree with you. I agree with you. And most experts say, look, we have to make sure that we have better intelligence internationally and certainly domestically. But that still leaves a threat at the airport. Now, how do you handle it? Do we draw back a little bit and say that we're going to try to target people who we think perhaps are the ones that we should be frisking? Do we then rely on the safety precautions that we have put in the plane with the reinforced doors, with the armed guards? What I'm saying is, do we draw back a little bit and make sure that our priorities are right? Or do we do something crazy? Some people say, hey,
Let's do crazy stuff.
It is frightening, though, and you've said this several times. It is frightening how many people say, hey, I don't care.
Just keep yourself safe.
Frisk me. You know, put your hands in my groin. I don't care. Blah, 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 blah. I want to be safe. And I heard a local talk show host say that ad nauseum. I wanted to throw up. She said it so many times. I don't care. I want to be safe. I'm tired of these people saying I'm giving up my freedom. Well, maybe they're saying because it's true. And once you give up that freedom, it's very, very hard, especially when you're dealing with the federal government in an issue like security of the United States.
Oh,
it's very, very hard once you give up those freedoms to get them back. I mean, that's why people are outraged, and you should be. So I guess my question to you, Rick, and it's a serious question, if you had the power, how would you handle the situation at the airport?
Simple. No carry-ons. We end all carry-ons. We no electronic gizmos, no gadgets, no iPods, no cell phones, none of that stuff. You check all that in your bag. That would be the first thing. The second part of it is, look, you're going to have to go through scanning, but you're going to have to go through metal detectors and that kind of stuff. And yeah, you're going to have to empty your pockets, and we're going to see what's in it. I'm not so crazy about, you know, the frisking and the naked scanner. Look, the reality is if they want to bring it down one way or another, it's going to happen. What we need better intelligence. But as a matter of precaution, do away with all this ridiculous, oh, you can't have more than 3 ounces in a bottle. You solve that problem by saying, you know what? You're not bringing anything on the plane. You check it in your luggage. You put it through. It sits on the bottom, and that's where it's going to sit. To me, that would be the very first thing I would do, but that's not going to happen because the airlines are going, oh, well, we don't want to upset our customers because our customers will be uncomfortable, and then they'll decide to drive 1,000 miles instead of fly.
No, I'm not so sure that's true. From what I'm hearing, a lot of those customers will be willing to put up with that.
You know, at the end of it, you know, This to me, it's about the American people. This idea that we're willing to give up our security and our freedom and all of this stuff just for this illusion, because you're never going to be safe. And you know, I've said it before, I can keep you safe from everybody else, but who's going to keep you safe from me? You know, once we give that away and we entrust this to some authority figure, who helps us from that authority figure? That's my problem here. Look, things are going to always happen. You do what you can to mitigate the risk, but at the end of the day, it's not taking my freedom away, groping my 8-year-old daughter. That is not going to be the answer. It's just not.
Well, here's another issue. And someone on one of the shows brought it up, the talk shows, and it may be thinking they're absolutely right. What makes you think that these terrorists aren't planning terrorist acts in other venues, other areas? What makes you think that they're gonna concentrate on airplanes?
Well, they're not. I mean, you know, our water supply, we've talked about this before. You can easily poison our water supply. I've had people email me and tell me, well, you know, the Boulder Dam, you know, or Hoover Dam or whatever you want to call it, that's what the terrorists are going after next because it'll wipe out Las Vegas. Yeah, you don't think the people who are in charge of intelligence know that? And they're trying to keep an eye on it? Look, at the end of this, are you going to stop living your life? Are you going to, take whatever freedoms you want. Me, I'm not going there. It's just not going to happen.
Well, and I think it bears repeating, and sometimes we forget it. And this conversation went on immediately after, 9/11. If we take away our own freedoms to safeguard us from the terrorist act, haven't to some degree the terrorists won?
Of course. And, you know, this idea of a national ID card has popped up again. I remember right after 9/11 when they rammed through the Patriot Act. I remember going to a meeting with the League of Women Voters in Allentown, and they had a panelist, three people who had read it, three people who had not, sitting on this panel. Guess who was for it and guess who was against it? The people who had read it were dead set against it. The people who hadn't had been given the right-wing talking points. They were in favor of it. Hadn't read it, didn't know what it said, but they were all in favor of it. And I remember people in that audience who were outraged that they couldn't get a national ID card so that they could zip right through, the security checkpoints. And I'm sitting here going, do you really think that they're going to, I mean, how easy is it to make up a driver's license now? And you're going to put all this faith in a card? We have way too much faith in technology. Way too much faith. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. Your call is 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
Loved one has suffered a workplace injury. Don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free book by Calhoun Associates by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 717-695-4722.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
Pay too much taxes, the poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
Yes, he is, and he's also against giving unemployment benefits to people who've been unemployed for longer than 26 weeks. He's also in favor of handing out $830 billion to the top 2% of the folks in the country. That's what he would be in favor of. Yeah, yeah. And he wouldn't be in favor of helping the hungry or the homeless, which is why we're doing it. December 18th through the 24th, we're going to be holding our Hungry and Homeless for the Holidays event. You can go to our website, hungryandhomeless.org. If you want to donate, you want to find out some more information, good place there to go. We're going to be at the Giant parking lot, 255 South Spring Garden Street in Carlisle, having our food event. We're going to put it all on Ustream so you can watch the whole event from the comfort and warmth of your own home. And you know what? Every once in a while, if you wouldn't mind clicking on that PayPal account and throwing them a couple of bucks, it really could help. Because I'm telling you, as we move toward the new year, and they're talking about 2.5 million people booted off the unemployment rolls by the end of the year, food banks are going to be overwhelmed. And the one that we're helping, Project Share, does a great job in the neighborhood, helps hundreds and hundreds of families, and it's well worth our time, our effort, and your time and effort. So we're hoping December 18th through the 24th, right up to Christmas Eve, that you'll come out, see us there at the Giant parking lot, 255 South Spring Garden Street. Drop off a can of corn, something. A case would be better. A whole cart full would be even better still. Or just back up a whole delivery van. That'd be nice.
I think it has direct bearing on what you're talking about. As of tomorrow, 78,000 Pennsylvanians will be without unemployment. If nothing is done by the end of March, you're talking just in this state a 250,000 Pennsylvanians, and I guarantee you quite a few of those will be in this area. We will be without unemployment.
And I hope they march in the streets, because that's what it's going to take, I think. The Tea Party got a lot of traction out of going to the streets. And if you could get 50, 100 people to march on the Capitol here, you get people out into the streets, I think you get things changed. At least that's my thought. Anyway, today in the Pittsburgh Tribune, the bitter battle between Pittsburgh's major healthcare players moved back to court yesterday when a federal appeals court revived West Penn Allegheny Health System's antitrust lawsuit against the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center and insurer Highmark. The lawsuit claims the Oakland-based hospital system and Highmark illegally conspired to destroy West Penn Allegheny and claim monopolies in health care and insurance. U.S. District Judge Arthur Schwab dismissed the lawsuit in October of 2009, calling it long on innuendo and short on fact, but a U.S. Third District Circuit Court of Appeals panel found ample ground to proceed with the claim and sent it back to the judge. The appellate court said, viewed as a whole, these allegations plausibly suggest that UPMC has engaged in anti-competitive conduct with UPMC, UPMC has competed with West Penn on some basis other than merit. The spokesman for UPMC, Paul Wood, insisted there is no legal or factual grounds for West Penn Allegheny's claims. Despite the appellate court's ruling, he called the lawsuit an attempt to divert attention from the Northside-based hospital system's financial problems. Here's the thing. 4 weeks ago, West Penn Allegheny, the region's second-largest hospital system behind UPMC, they operated at an almost a $90 million loss. The ailing system today will release its first quarter financial reports for fiscal 2011, which began in July. It's poised to lay off 400 people. Here's the thing. If they're doing what is said to be having done, and you've got the two conspiring against the other, it's no wonder they're losing money. And this is the problem with our healthcare system. It's gotten to the point to where it's monopolistic, where now you have one insurer, one hospital system. and those are your choices. And is that choice at all? You know, what happened to the days when communities had their own hospital? And you didn't have to drive a half an hour to get to care. You didn't have to drive an hour. Not a good sign. From the White House blog, since the enactment of health care reform legislation in March, several states' attorneys generals and others opposed to the law have filed lawsuits challenging the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act. Legal challenges like these are nothing new, they write. Challenges to the Social Security Act, Civil Rights Act, and the Voting Rights Act all failed. Now, challenges to the health care law are failing in court. In October, a judge in Michigan found the Affordable Care Act to be constitutional. Today, a federal judge in Virginia dismissed a lawsuit brought by Liberty University that challenged the constitutionality of the health care reform law. The judge upheld the law and said that the requirement that individuals maintain health insurance is constitutional. He wrote, quote, "I hold that there is a rational basis for Congress to conclude that individuals' decisions about how and when to pay for health care are activities that in the aggregate substantially affect the interstate health care market. Nearly everyone will be nearly everyone will require health care services at some point in their lifetime, and it is not always possible to predict when one will be afflicted by an injury or illness and require care. Far from inactivity, by choosing to forego insurance, plaintiffs are making an economic decision to try and pay for health care services later, out of pocket, rather than now, through the purchase of insurance. As Congress found, the total incidence of these economic decisions has a substantial impact on the national market for health care by collectively shifting billions of dollars onto other market participants and driving up the prices of insurance." Pretty much what we've been saying all along. This to me should have been a conservative issue where the conservatives say, yeah, mandating health care makes sense because I don't want to have to pay for you. Being responsible for oneself, to me, is a conservative frame. It's what they've always touted themselves as, and now they're saying, well, we'll accept that. No, well, we believe it, but nothing.
Well, come on, let's be realistic here. The conservatives, on many issues, they pick and choose. I mean, you listen to conservatives and they tout capitalism. They tout the free enterprise system. Again, what's the hallmark of the free enterprise system? Competition. When it comes to healthcare, somehow the discussion of competition didn't enter into their discussion. They opposed the healthcare reform. But yet, the irony is the system we have now is a monopolistic system, and the system that was proposed with the public option would have, at the very least, provided a modicum of competition, which is what capitalism is supposed to be about. And by having true competition, you drive down cost in theory. And I do think the public option would have been effective.
I think so as well. But I'm still a fan of single payer. We're not talking about hospitals. Talking about who's paying the bill. I'm in favor of having doctors and hospitals competing and doing what they're doing. Even though it's not really, in my mind, a competitive field. If I'm on the ground having a heart attack, I'm not, speed dialing, looking for the best deal. It's generally who's closest. I don't have the three local hospitals going, hey, I got a coupon today. Who's got 2-for-1 heart attacks?
Well, I mean, look, at the end of the day, although some of these issues can get complex, this isn't rocket science. It isn't rocket science in this sense. Why couldn't we have embraced single payer? Now, I understand Medicare for all. When you're offering Medicare for all to everyone, perhaps the rules need to be different. Perhaps we can evolve where we change a little bit here, change a little bit there, but there's no reason why this nation couldn't come up with a better healthcare system that works.
Simply put, you offer, here's the price. This is what it's going to cost to buy into Medicare and to buy into our system, just like any insurance company. This is what you're going to pay. This is what our overhead is, 3%. So we'll compare our 3% overhead to the 15% that the insurance companies are pocketing, that Wall Street's taken out of it. Because to me, the answer to this is taking health care off of Wall Street, getting it out of the investor class's hands, because it's a revenue generator. It's a profit maker. We know that. So the first step, the very first step, would be take it out of a for-profit mode. That makes perfect sense to me. Prevent illnesses so it doesn't ring up big bills. We know diabetes is one of the biggest cost problems throughout someone's lives if they get it. That's the big one. Why not try and prevent it? You know, I know people, and I've had some truck driver friends who are a couple of pounds overweight, you know, maybe 200-300.
200-300 overweight.
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
200-300
pounds. Just a few?
Yeah, you know, these are people who, honestly and truthfully, the best thing for them would be one of those stomach surgeries to help them lose weight. Because, you know, this idea, well, you should just stop eating, you know, exercise, ain't going to happen. There's some folks just ain't going to happen. So you help them. And we've got the technology to do it. It's a reasonably cost surgery. Help them get through it. Help them sustain a lifestyle that's going to be healthier down the road. Because, you know, like I got a couple of friends. They need hip replacements. They need knee replacements. They need all of this care. And, yeah, they're a little bit overweight, 100, 200 pounds. But we don't do that. We don't think that way. We think of, oh, well, gee, you know, he's going to need a couple of hip replacements, a couple of knees. Wow, that's good money. He's going to have diabetes, so the drug companies can sell him their testing strips, and they can spend all that money on drugs. And at the end of it, who ends up paying? Not the insurance companies, the taxpayers. Because we know 95% of amputations due to diabetes is paid for by Medicaid or Medicare. We know that. We know that the worst parts of this are paid for by us anyway. And the other part of this going back to this personal responsibility frame, in 2008, do you know we spent $43 billion in emergency room fees only for people who didn't have insurance? $43 billion for people who didn't have insurance going to the emergency rooms. That's on average about $1,100 per family, about $410 per individual premium. And we shouldn't have personal responsibility. You keep selling that, Teen Twizzlers. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
Don't let us get stupid, all right. Just make us be brave. Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high quality union made and American made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one stop full service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You'd say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything?
saying, "That's Mike."
Call them at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out our website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the show, you can get it right there on the website. Also, you can watch the video or the live stream for our folks at home. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Appreciate you being here. You've heard of this company, Express Scripts, and we talked a little bit about it with Lou. They are the nation's second largest pharmacy benefits manager. They stock your drugs when you need them. And I think we've been talking about this for some time. They announced recently that they're going to be closing one of their Bensalem, Pennsylvania facilities, because, and again, it comes down to pure, simple, unadulterated greed. The workers aren't willing to give up enough money. They're not willing to take big enough pay cuts. They're not willing to have deep enough benefit cuts. Not willing to. So 350 people are going to lose their jobs there because they're not willing to work for free, basically. And the threat by Express Scripts is that they'll be closing the second one. So between the two of them, that could be 1,000 more workers unemployed. And why? Because they're greedy. And because the company knows, they know there's an opportunity here to really stick it to the workers. Because most people are like, well, I'm just glad I got a job, and, oh, I'll give up what I can. This is a profitable company. Last year, they posted a $1.7 billion profit, a 23% increase over the year before. This year, so far this year, they have, in pure profit, pure profit, in their pocket, jingling, going around in their coins, $857 million plus. In their pocket, pure profit. And yet they want massive concessions from their workers. Now understand, they do a lot of federal contracts. This is our money as well. And we pay good money. You know, here's the thing that gets me about this. When you're talking about state and federal contracts, we give those contracts based on the bid, based on how much your costs are. So now we're going to give, think about this for a second. We're going to give them a lucrative contract with the thought that they're going to provide us with a service, but also that they're going to hire quality people at a living wage. Well, now what they do is they take those jobs, they throw those people out in the street, they move to somewhere where they can pay, oh, I don't know, half, and they pocket the rest. That's what this is about. It's greed. Pure and simple. Their top five executives earned in excess of $21 million. The CEO, over $10 million, all by himself. This is a company that's worth $26.5 billion. And they've made a very nice profit. But again, it's never enough. It's always more, more, more. So they go to the company and they go to the employees and say, you know what? You're going to have to give us almost $9 million in concessions or we're leaving. That's it. Well, they came up with $8 million. They countered and said, okay, we'll give you $8 million in concessions. We will take $8 million in pay cuts, in benefit cuts, in health care cuts, in pension cuts. We'll take this pain. We'll take all of this pain and all of this suffering just so you can keep our jobs here. And the company said no. And, you know, I got to be honest with you. At some point, don't we have to hold these folks responsible for something? I mean, am I missing something? You know, Now, look, I understand what this is. This is union busting. And for people who aren't part of a union, go, oh, who cares? Ah, oh, there's a what? I'm going to stick in unions around. Well, those stinking unions, they support family wages. They support health care for people. They raise the standard of living. And when you destroy these jobs, you bring everybody down. We all go down with it. And that's the problem I have with this stuff. You know, this idea that, oh, we're gonna save, the company's gonna save a whole bunch of money on unemployment costs, and they'll be able to offer their service for less. Oh yeah, that's gonna happen. Hold your breath for that. Where that money goes, the cut in wages. Now understand, you know, these workers, they have money in their pocket. They're taking concessions. That concession money was probably discretionary spending. Was spending that they went, hey, on a Saturday night went to a movie. Or hey, went to the neighborhood Chuck E. Cheese and had a party for their kids. It's money they used to spend doing that kind of stuff that supported other businesses in the community. No more. So when you start to see that kind of constriction, that kind of spiraling down, it just doesn't stop right there. It affects it's a ripple effect across the entire economy. And when we see companies who are profitable at this time saying, oh, hey, you know what? Here's a good opportunity. We're going to use the economic crisis to really stick it to those workers. We should hold them accountable. Look, I understand if a company's struggling and they need a little help to get by, I understand. You got to pitch in. But when they're this profitable, I'm sorry. No. And thank goodness these workers said no. 87% voted no. That's democracy in the workplace. That's people saying, you know what? We'd rather take our money. We'll put a fund together and we'll stand up to this and we'll fight back. Because there is no conceivable reason for this company to be demanding that kind of return. There's just not. There is no rational thought process that you can tell me. There's not.
Well, you touched on something, Rick, and again, why is it this way? When you have companies that from time to time get help from the local governments and the state governments, sometimes even the federal governments, why aren't there safeguards built into them? Why aren't there requirements built into those loans that you treat your workers with a modicum of human decency, and you do the right thing. And I know a lot of people don't want the government involved, but do you know what? Here's the truth. Sometimes you got to push people to do the right thing, and it's certainly true with companies. And if you got to push them a little bit, and that's the only way it works, well, then you do it. Why aren't there more? And we saw it with the TARP funds. We saw it with some of the money going on in Washington in the last couple of years. Not enough safeguards. We trusted the system. Well, they'll do what's right. Well, I guess we found out all too many instances, and you're talking about classic. They don't do what's right.
And, again, I think the first place that you start with this is you go to those state and federal contracts. If they do close this plant, and you get them to go to somebody else, to me, that's what has to happen.
And the irony is, if it was state money, the very taxpayers who paid money into the state, who then gave to this company, are the ones that are being abused by the company. That's the irony.
And the other part of this is, you know, you're going to lay these 1,000 people off, possibly. Those are 1,000 more unemployed people here in Pennsylvania for a company that was very profitable. That's my problem with all this. This idea that the corporations are going to save us. They are not. What they're going to do is they're going to save themselves. And it's, hey, tough luck, buddy. Grab a floaty because you're on your own. And if you can't float, well, that's it. I'll take a quick break. Right back after this.
Oh,
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Congress sent a message to the long-term jobless on Tuesday. Let them eat cake. Jesse Russell reports.
At midnight last night, nearly 800,000 jobless workers lost a lifeline. The Congress was unable to pass an extension to unemployment benefits, which would have kept those who have been seeking a job for more than 6 months continuing to receive extra help. By the end of December, an estimated 2 million jobless will lose their unemployment insurance. Prior to the Thanksgiving holiday, an effort to stretch the extended unemployment insurance program until February was blocked in the House by Republicans. On Monday, Montana's Democratic Senator Max Baucus introduced legislation that could extend those benefits until the end of next year. Republicans in the Senate have also vowed to block that bill. Economists have been lining up to encourage the Congress and the President to extend the benefits. 34 economists signed onto a letter that said the benefits are good for the economy. A rally is planned in the nation's capital later today that will include Democratic lawmakers, AFL-CIO Treasurer Liz Shuler, and hundreds of unemployed workers. The national unemployment rate is currently 9.6%.
Nations all over the world are coming together in Cancun, Mexico, the first 2 weeks of December, to talk about a global climate solution.
Utility Workers of America Chief of Staff Stuart Acuff on the Global Climate Change Conference underway in Mexico. Acuff says the U.S. has an opportunity to save the planet's environment while also generating millions of green jobs. But the country must seize the opportunity now.
The U.S. has to take the lead in that, and that means investing in what's in the best interest of this country and its people, investing in renewable and sustainable energy. We no longer have the excuse that there's not the technology. Everybody knows that's BS. We no longer have the excuse that it's not proven science. Everybody knows that's BS. Now we just have the necessity of doing what's in the best interest of the country and the best interest of our people.
Giant pharmacy benefits manager Express Scripts is pushing its SEIU-represented workers for millions of dollars in wage and benefit cuts, even though the company has posted an $850 million profit so far this year. Express Scripts says it would lay off 350 workers and threatened another 650 layoffs if the workers don't cave in to its demands. The workers rejected the company's last and final offer just before the holidays. Now the workers are preparing for a strike or a lockout. The workers have started a fight-back fund and are soliciting donations from labor and community allies to support these workers. Go online to InsideESI.com. This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers, a union of professionals. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
One 888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Also, go to hungryandhomeless.org. There's an opportunity to, you know, throw a couple of bucks to Project Share as we're doing our Hungry and Homeless for the Holidays event, December 18th through the 24th. If you're interested in helping out, you can email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com, or call here at the studio, 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. There is an answering machine, so you can leave your name, information. If you're part of a choir, singing group, something, dance troupe, whatever, that's the idea.
And I think it's only fair to mention, I mean, we've been trying to get a hold of as many companies locally as we can, but if we don't get a hold of your company and you work for somebody and you and your coworkers want to get together and collect some food and bring it out, we'd be glad to see you, and we'll actually give your company a shout-out.
Yeah, the other part of that is we're doing a Skid Row promotion where you have the ability to buy a portion of a skid. A skid costs $2,000, and, you know, we go all the way down to a 20th of a skid that you can buy for $100. The idea is that we get some money together and help them buy skids of food because that's how we really take care of this problem. A can helps. You know, a bag of groceries helps. But we need to, that big number. And that's why we're doing this. Hopefully we'll fill the truck up this year, and it'll be a good start to the new year. But, you know, there's a lot of myths about what is hunger. And I came across a piece today in the Washington Post written by a guy named Robert Egger. He's the founder and president of the D.C. Central Kitchen and the Campus Kitchens Project. And he goes through a couple of things which I thought were interesting to read through and maybe talk a little bit about. He goes through the five of them. Number one, he says, hunger is supposed to happen in other places, in distant countries where droughts or storms or famine compel us to donate money and oblige our government to send relief workers and food aid. In reality, he writes, hunger is also much closer to home. According to a new report by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, 70.4 million American families, almost 15% of U.S. households, are now food insecure, an almost 30% increase since 2006. This means that during any given month, they will be out of money, out of food, and forced to miss meals or seek assistance to feed themselves. Even those who get three meals a day may be malnourished. And this is the part that I think a lot of folks don't get to. He writes, Americans increasingly eat cheap, sugary foods whose production is underwritten by government subsidies for the corn and the dairy industry. He says, as the New York Times reported this month, the USDA loudly promotes eating better, forming better eating habits, while quietly working with Domino's to develop a new line of pizzas with 40% more cheese. So on one hand, they're saying, oh, you need to eat better. But on the other hand, they're pushing companies that are loading you up. And as I've said, there are folks, and I'm one of them, who grew up on the welfare diet, which was anything with a noodle in it, anything with, any starchy thing. That was our diet. Anything just spaghetti constantly because it filled you up. It was cheap, but it's no good for you. It packs on the pounds. And we realize that here's the problem with being overweight. It leads to a bunch of other problems and it raises our healthcare costs. So what they're saying is, look, maybe we have some sane policies and malnourishment. He says, because it's merely a humanitarian concern. The second thing he goes through, Jake, is that hunger threatens our economic future and our national security. He says an astounding 1 in 4 American children, close to 17 million, live in food insecure homes. A kid who is hungry cannot learn. A kid who can't learn drops out of school. A kid without an education can't get a job and help America compete in the global economy. A kid without a job may turn to crime, get arrested, and end up costing us $40,000 a year. And, we've talked about this before. A lot of the early school lunch programs, the milk program, came out of the fact that we had such small children that we couldn't get them for the military. They couldn't get into the army. That they were underweight. They were malnourished to get into the army.
Well, also when they were young in the developmental stage, It actually hurts the development of their ability to reason, their brain power, and long term. I mean, once you fail at that stage, you never get it back.
He goes on to write, this third point is the person most likely to go hungry is a single working mother. Federal programs ensure that low income children can get free meals at school, but their mothers, many of whom are single with low-paying jobs in the service sector, often make the tough choices between food, rent, gas for their car, health care, and new shoes for their kids. Millions of American women face this predicament and, feed their children without feeding themselves. And, this goes back for me to that family values frame that the right loves to use. They love to wrap themselves arms around the children. Oh, we love the children! But while they're in the womb, they don't tell you that part.
When I'm all born.
But they don't want to feed them. And then, I got to be honest, that's kind of what worries me. kind of what worries me.
Well, you do have groups that fight hunger, but do they have the clout? No, they don't have the clout, and that's sad. I can tell you this, just from a visual. I mean, we like to think of hunger again, and your article that you were talking about hit it. We like to think of hunger pretty much in other countries, and there are. I mean, you look at these famines where thousands of young, innocent children are dying every day. But some of the saddest things I've ever seen in my life, when they go and they take television crews and they go into Appalachia and they look at the abject poor. These children have nothing. They don't have running water. They barely have a place to sleep. They don't have enough food. And to think that in the United States of America, that those kind of things are going on. It's not just Appalachia. It's all over. I mean, big cities right here, I can tell you, are the state capital of our state, Rick. I've walked those streets, and those streets are every bit as bad. The bad sections of Harrisburg are as bad, every bit, of Philly, New York, and Chicago. And
well,
all
poverty
the
knows no boundaries.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
According to a Jonathan Bloom book he writes, the book American Wasteland, up to 40% of food that we produce is ultimately thrown away. I mean, that number to me is amazing. But he writes much of it, such as household waste or decomposing fruits and vegetables, is unfit to eat or impractical to collect, with unnecessary expiration dates, particularly on canned foods, condemn millions of pounds of food to landfills. Logistically, we just can't feed everyone with leftovers. And, you know, part of this is, you know, how we allocate things. You know, I've often wondered why, you know, I've often wondered why we don't have a better system for saying, okay, we've got this food. It's close to being outdated. Let's get it into a system where it's immediately distributed and it's immediately consumed. We don't do it. We just seem to pitch it.
I believe there are some organizations that try to, but you're right. It's not. I often wonder that myself. And a lot of times they'll say, well, you know, there's regulation, blah, 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 blah. But I believe something could, it takes organization, it takes ingenuity, but I think you are right. But again, Rick, if the economy's bad and, you know, the restaurants aren't doing well and there aren't as many restaurants, you know, there's less food. There's even less food available.
And the reason I bring this up is where he concludes, because this is the big part of it. You know, he talks about Johnson's war on poverty that started in 64, and he talked about, you know, helping people with cheese and butter and food stamps, you know, the TANF thing now or the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, where we're getting people food stamps to help them buy food. Now, to be honest, you know, it did bring hunger down a little bit, but for the most part, it hasn't done what it was supposed to do. And his end premise is the fact that, you know, and this is what he writes, yet the number of Americans who struggle to put food on their tables has never decreased. This is because hunger isn't about food. It's about jobs and wages. And he says passing the passage of living wage laws, tariffs that protect U.S. jobs, and comprehensive public health care, coupled with consumer support for businesses that pay good wages, reinvest in their communities, and embrace green policies. He's saying that this would do more to do away with hunger than any government program. And I agree, which is why I've always said I'm against handouts. I'm against any type of handouts. I'm not in favor of welfare. I'm not in favor of really of long-term unemployment. You know, we're talking about the unemployment extension. And look, ideologically speaking, I'm against extending it. What I think we should be doing is we should be giving those people jobs so that they're productive citizens, that they're getting the value of going to work every day. That's what we should be doing. Instead of saying, here, Jake, here's $310. How about give them $500 and say, go clean up so-and-so's yard, or hey, you know, Mrs. So-and-so down the block needs her house painted. Here's a brush and some paint. That's what we should be doing. And the same thing with these poverty programs. It's about jobs. It's about income. It's about economics. Simple stuff to me. To me, anyway. Because I remember my mother struggling mightily to find a job. And to be honest, the early 70s were not a good time for a single woman with a child. Just not good. Not good at all. Late 60s, early 70s. And at times we ended up on welfare. And she hated it and it killed her. But what are you going to do?
You have to do what you have to do to survive.
She
was not unlike millions of women. The truth is, welfare is meant to be a temporary helping hand up. And most people are only on it temporarily, although if you listen to the conservatives, you would think the whole world is, you know, everyone that ever got on welfare,
it's the welfare
stayed
queen.
On it generationally. No, that's not true. Are there generational? Yes.
Sure there are. And that comes down to the structural problems. That comes down to education. That comes down to opportunity. And I say, if we gave those people jobs and made the government employer of last resort, you would have none of that. People would be able to get skills and would be able to go to work.
And the conservatives tend to not want to do that. They want to funnel those people, if anything, through an agency that's going to make money, a company that's going
there
to
you go.
Privatizing
there's,
it.
There's got to be a profit at the end. Let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Several of America's top high-tech giants are now breaking with conventional thinking on the offshoring of their factories and jobs, asking a heretofore unthinkable question: who needs China? Let's invest in new state-of-the-art factories, they declare excitedly. We'll launch a bold new initiative to train tens of thousands of teachers who, in turn, will educate the high-tech workforce of the future, generating a wave of jobs and making our American corporations the most competitive in the world. Wow, what a vision, what a boost to America's middle-class possibilities. America? Who said anything about the USA? No, the high-tech powerhouses are not decamping from China to reinvest in our country, but to shift their production to Vietnam. It seems that the millionaire chieftains of Silicon Valley now deem the price of low-wage workers in China to be too high, and their wandering eyes have settled on Vietnam, where the per capita income is less than half that of the Chinese people. Thus, on October 29th, the CEO of Intel stood in a packed auditorium in Ho Chi Minh City and hollered out, "Hello, Vietnam!" He was there for the dedication of Intel's sparkling billion-dollar chip factory, which has a clean room the size of 5 football fields and employs 4,000 workers. Also, Intel is trying to realign Vietnam's educational system to be more corporate-friendly, pouring money into the training of 87,000 teachers. This is Jim Hightower saying, Hewlett-Packard is another world wanderer moving to Vietnam, having built a facility there for outsourcing its software engineering work. Wouldn't it be nice in these times of middle-class decline in our United States of America if the high-tech honchos who benefit so lavishly from our country were to move more of their investments and jobs here?
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once, The Rick Smith Show. I got it!
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. If you got something on your mind, question, comment. What do you think about this unemployment thing? It's one of, to me, honestly and truthfully, it's look. If we can talk about handing out $830 billion $830 billion to the top 1%, we should be able to talk about, extending unemployment benefits. Simple thing. It's a no-brainer for me as far as I'm concerned. An absolute no-brainer. Anyway, let's go to the phones. We got Mike on line one. How are we doing tonight, Mike?
Hi, Rick. Hey, just listening to the show. And, I kind of disagree a little bit. I think the country has an obligation to feed people and take care of people as long as need be. Because the government that was supposed to protect and defend the people of this country have allowed certain people to ravage us, remove our industry, destroy the livelihoods and the people's ability to make a living. And simply put, what option is there?
I agree, but here's where my premise is. Because I do wholeheartedly believe in the therapeutic qualities of work, of getting up every day, having a goal for the day, and doing that. I do believe that there's something to that. And I do believe in my lifetime, and this is what I've seen, that it becomes almost comfortable. And I do believe that, nobody wants a handout. I think most people want to work for it. And it's not about saying that we're not going to help people. I'm in favor of making sure that everybody is fed, everybody has a place to stay, everybody has clothes. I'm in favor of all that. It's just a matter of how do we distribute it. For me, if we were to say government's employer of last resort, you don't have the right coming out and saying, well, we're just lazy people sitting home, such as long-term unemployment. You got Corbett who said they don't want to work. There are jobs out there, they're just not looking for them. But we know that's not true. So that's my position. I mean, I'm sure there's a better way of doing this, but do you really think that long-term saying, here we're just going to keep sending out checks, that's the right way to go?
Well, the point I make, Rick, is that government can decide what they're going to do, and the Republicans can decide what they're going to do. But the fact is, when you have enough people that don't have jobs, and you cut off the support for, existence,
right,
for food, for clothing, for shelter, you take those things away, you are creating a time bomb in your country.
Oh, I absolutely agree. But here's the thing. I think we're talking about two different things then. I'm not saying cut people off.
Right.
I'm saying instead of here's a check for $310 a week to stay home, I'm saying here's $500 a week to go do the things that aren't being done. I'm saying stimulate the economy by giving people a reasonable wage so that they, A, have the sense of accomplishment and they have the – hey, I got a job. I'm working. I'm making my own way. I'm paying taxes. I'm doing all of this stuff. I think that's good for society. And government's the one who's going to have to pay for that. That's where I'm at.
Well, I think the discussion needs to be had, though, at a level where people can understand what the stakes are. And the stakes are very high. And the fact is that this government has failed to take care of people in this country as it worshiped at the holy altar of capitalism. And capitalism is rule of the jungle. Whether anybody likes it or not, yep, that's what it is.
Yeah, it's monopolistic. It is what it is. I mean, we like to try and soften it with regulation, but the reality is, at the end, the big fish always eats the little fish.
And in this country, the elitist make the rules. And so they, by making those rules, block out any competition from small people. I'll give you a classic example. Let's say you're out of work. But while you were working, you bought a good car. And you own a good car. Yeah, it's a good car. And you say, well, I got this good car. And I've got enough money. I can afford some gasoline. I'm going to give people rides in my car for money. Gainful enterprise. You can't do that.
No.
That's illegal.
Need a license.
Yeah, you need a license. Oh, by the way, license is $50,000 freaking dollars.
Especially if you're in New York. Then there are a million.
Right. But Okay, so what is this? I thought we believed in capitalism. Why is the license for somebody who wants to do that $50,000? He's got a car. He's got gas. He's a good driver. And he's going to, you know, try people around. Sounds like a business entrepreneur to me, right? Nope, can't do it. Can't do it. And that's really what it's become. Government has become the tool of wealthy elitists who really don't want competition.
Well, as I've always said, we haven't deregulated anything. We've just re-regulated it.
Right. You've regulated barriers to protect them. We have a Trading with the Enemies Act. You're not supposed to trade with people who are the enemy of the nation. Well, you know, if they lived up to that law, there wouldn't be anything on the shelves in Walmart.
Interesting point. Sometimes you got to wonder, though, Mike, don't you?
I
wonder why people haven't, especially at the bottom of the economic scale, why people who live in these housing projects, why they choose to. I mean, when I was a kid growing up in the projects, our house was probably robbed 20 times.
Mm-hmm.
And it was done by the neighbors. By people, because, you know, it was food week or something, and we had some groceries in the house. Somebody came in and stole the groceries. We were stealing from each other. They never went over to the high-class neighborhoods. No. It was always from each other. They were eating each other.
Well, part of that is because the military force that the elite had to protect them wouldn't let you do that. You could rob in the projects. Nobody cared.
Nope.
But you go up to, you know, a nice part of town and start that, man, you got soldiers all over the place.
I could tell you stories.
We call them cops. They're soldiers.
Yeah, I could tell you stories. I appreciate the call, Mike.
All
thank
right.
you. Yeah, I mean, you know, at the end of this, it is what it is.
Depending on when something happened, the cops wouldn't show up for...
Oh, they didn't come in after dark.
They wouldn't come in after dark until the next day.
No. Whatever happened, and it better be morning time. Because nobody wants to go into a war zone at night. And that's what it turned into. You know, and that's my problem with some of these big housing developments. You know, I lived in a big housing project. And it wasn't a high rise, it was spread out, but, you know, you had your problems. You had gang problems, you had drug problems. And this was the early 70s. I mean, guns weren't as prevalent then as they are now. Now everybody's got a gap. You know, put a cap in your behind. You know, when I was a kid, everybody was knifing each other. Occasionally, some people got shot, and you'd see people laying in the puddle. But for the most part, people were stabbing each other. You know, I remember the one guy got stabbed in the throat with a Jack Daniels bottle over a basketball game. Over a basketball game, dumb. But that's, you know, that's what happens. Anyway, I'm still stuck in my way, which I think if you give people the respect of having a job, because one of the things that we haven't talked about with the unemployment thing, and I've read it in a couple of places, is, you know, a father figure who hasn't worked in a year or two, you know, their kids start to look at him and say, you know, aren't you supposed to be working? My other friend's fathers, they're working. And it's that role model thing. So again, I think my idea, it's not that we're not taking care of people. It's not that, you know, there isn't an avenue there. But I do believe there is a strong, strong therapeutic quality. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about the food thing that just passed, the food bill. Right back after this.
You're free, we'll never leave. If you want to
ways it work? Do you think you need an attorney? You probably don't. To protect yourself, you do need to know your rights. Retain control. Order your free book, The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case, by visiting workinjuryinpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Order your free book, The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case, by visiting workinjuryinpa.com or calling 695-4722.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make everything happen!
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Yeah, right now. The Senate today approved the biggest overhaul to the nation's food safety laws since the 1930s, according to the Washington Post, voting 73 to 25 to give vast new authorities to the Food and Drug Administration, place new responsibilities on farmers and food companies to prevent contamination, and for the first time set safety standards for imported food, a growing part of the American diet. They also go on to say the legislation follows a spate of national outbreaks of food poisoning involving products such as eggs, peanuts, and spinach, in which thousands of people were sickened and more than a dozen died. The measure passed with support from both Democrats and Republicans, one of the few pieces of legislation to bridge differences in an otherwise sharply divided body. The House approved a different, more stringent version of the bill more than a year ago. House leaders have indicated that they will accept the Senate's version of the bill, however, in order to avoid the time-consuming process of the conference and speed the sending of the legislation to the president's desk. Proponents hope to have the legislation signed into law by the end of the lame duck session. The T-Twizzlers absolutely losing their ever-loving freaking minds. This is government overreaching, they say. Oh, how dare they? The free market always does the right thing. And my question would be, if the free market always did the right thing, would 1 in 4 Americans be affected by food illnesses? Would 5,000 people a year die because of it? No. So corporations are not. Let me read. They're not doing the right thing always. Simple. This bill, it's one of those things. Could have been better, as everything could always be, but it gives the USD, the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, the authority to mandate, this is what's important, mandate the recall of food that they suspect are contaminated. This is a big change from, oh, would you please, there are people who are dying from your lettuce that somebody took a dump on. Please, could you maybe think about recalling that contaminated food because it's killing people? Could you maybe please, please? Because that's what we have to do now. If we want to recall, if we want something to be recalled, we've got to go to the company and say, oh, could you please do that? Would you mind? Would it be too much to ask? I know you're busy. It's also going to make it easier to find the source of the contamination because we're going to do a little tracking. Not a bad idea. So if there's lettuce, like I said, that's been contaminated from workers not getting a break, and, you know, they got to go. Got to go where you got to go, and there they are in the field, which is why what that whole lettuce outbreak was about. We'll know where it is, and we'll know who's responsible, which I think is a good thing. It's also going to require food producers to have written food safety plans that can be accessed in case of emergencies. Another good piece of thought there. And instead of the assumption of, you know, the good corporation, you know, good, the food's pure, and, you know, we should only do things because, you know, the food's just, you know, fine and dandy that they're pumping out to us. This bill gives the FDA authority to prevent, be a little preventative, to prevent foodborne illnesses and not simply react to them. Here's what bothers me, Jake. The FDA cannot, under this law, file any criminal charges against the producers, even if they knowingly put contaminated food into the market. You may remember the peanut guy I forget where it was, but there was a guy who knowingly put contaminated peanuts into peanut butter. He did it because he knew it, but they just didn't want to do away with it because it would have cost too much money. So they sent these tainted peanuts out, and a bunch of people got sick from it. I say if they want to be people, corporations want to be people, we should be able to lock them up. But this bill doesn't have that kind of enforcement. There's some other things that, you know, give the FDA a little more authority, but this I consider teeth. Look, if you want to be people, we should be able to lock you up. So I guess this is the pound of flesh that we had to give in order to have just a little bit of oversight.
And I was surprised at the numbers, and that's probably one of the keys.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you want your oversight, it's only going to go so far. You know, we've got to give our pound of flesh to the corporatists, which they did. And again, for me, you know, look, at the end of this, I'm not against corporations producing food. I'm against the centralization. I wish we had a more diverse food supply. I don't know. I think the cat's out of the bag. I don't think we're ever going to go back to local farming. I don't know that we're ever going to go back to going to, you know, Sam the Butcher, like on the Brady Bunch, and have Sam cut us up a cow that was, you know, raised right down the street. Don't know that we're going back to that. Would like to. That could be a good idea. But never. I don't think it's going to happen. But this is a step in the right direction, I think.
It's much needed. You mentioned something that brings back memories. I mean, for years, my family, we used to go together and we'd buy a steer and then we'd spend 3-4 days actually butchering it. That was kind of neat. And, you know, you knew that it was locally grown. You know that, you knew what you were getting. And, you got it at a reasonable price, but those days pretty much are gone.
Yeah, I mean, the sad thing that bothers me is, you know, and this is one of the conversations I've had with folks. You know, do you know where your meat's coming from? Do you know where the vegetables are coming from? Do you know where any of this is coming from? You know, let's just think about it from a national security standpoint. You know, we're worried about getting onto a plane because a terrorist might have something on the plane. So we're not getting on planes because we're worried that the terrorist might be there. I'm saying, you know, I'm more worried about them contaminating our centralized food supply. Mm. I'm more worried about them contaminating our water supply. That's what I'm worried about. I'm not worried about somebody hijacking a plane because, look, it's never going to happen again. You're never going to see a compliant passenger. Somebody's going to stand up and say, I take control of the plane! And 100 people on the plane are going to attack him. Say, okay, if you're going to blow it up, we're going to blow it up right here. I mean, you're never going to see that kind of complacency. It's not coming back. So I'm not worried about planes being hijacked. I'm worried about this other stuff. Mm. I'm worried about the fact that FedEx lost a box for a day that had radioactive material in it. I'm worried about that because they can make a dirty bomb out of that. They can contaminate things. That's what worries me. Getting on a plane, not a worry. All that is, and I've said it before and I'll say it again, that's a show. That's a show to make you feel safe. oh, look what we're doing to give you this illusion of some security. That's all. Me, personally, I got to be honest, I'm more afraid of the airline companies who are cutting costs at every turn, not maintaining the planes properly. That worries me more than somebody with a box cutter. Now, I'm worried about them shipping heavy maintenance out to El Salvador. That's what I'm worried about. I'm worried about preventative maintenance work being done out of the country.
I'm worried about tainted fish they're bringing in from China. And I see it all the time. Tainted apples? Good Lord. They're selling apples made in China in this area. I mean, you talk about irony. There are apple orchards all over this area.
Well, we just can't get it. We can't get
And we're bringing them in from China? Are you kidding me?
Well, I do like Chinese apples. They're like red in the middle. Tell me you haven't seen a Chinese apple that's red in the middle.
Can't say I have. But that, seriously, that fish, the way they're produced over there, oh my. There is no way. There is no way.
You know, but at the end of this, you know, for me, again, going back to that, it's just that illusion that's there, man. They're not keeping us safe. They're giving us that illusion that we feel safe.
Look at the shipping coming in. There's only a small percentage that they can actually check. Are we safe? No.
Anyway, I don't know if you saw this, and this is one of those things, you know, in talking about this food bill, the tea twizzlers went nuts. The right went nuts. The government's overreaching. The government's taking over our lives. Corporations should be able to police themselves because they've done such a great job of it. This guy, I don't know if you've heard of him. His name is Judson Phillips. He hosts a little radio program like we do here, only he calls it Tea Party Nation. It's the home for conservatives. Which, again, you know, it's one of those things where I go, was the Tea Party a conservative movement? Is that what it was touted as? I thought it was a spontaneous uprising of grassroots organizers who, you know, were from all political affiliations. I guess now they pretty much said, yeah, we BS'd you. Well, it's a little lie. Get used to it. We do it all the time. The home for conservatives. He's pushing this frame again. That the insane part of the Republican Party is talking about, he wants us to go back to the good old days where the founders originally put certain restrictions on who could get the right to vote. And you know where I'm going with this. He said, quote, one of those was you had to be a property owner. And it makes a lot of sense, he said, because if you're a property owner, you actually have a vested stake in the community. If you're not a property owner, you know, I'm sorry, but property owners have a little bit more vested interest in the community than non-property owners. So he basically wants to go back along with Scalia, Supreme Court Justice, and Rick Perry, former governor there. I think he's still governor, soon to be former, of Texas. A couple of people in the Senate, a couple of people in the House who want to repeal the 17th Amendment, which said you and I, we can't vote for. We can't vote for senators, which, again, you know, I go back to this idea that exactly what's your point? This is where I love about tea twizzlers. They throw two things together that have almost nothing to do with each other. They're completely exclusive of each other. He says he wants property owners to vote. Therefore, we should repeal the 17th Amendment. Okay. How did you get to the two of those? Those are two very different thoughts. One is, hey, you voting people, you're too stupid to vote for Senate. We need to have a bunch of people in the state legislature who will decide. And, of course, we know what that means. That means a whole bunch of horse trading and a whole bunch of money changing hands and a whole bunch of corporations funding that. And you and I having less voice. That's what they want. They don't really believe in democracy and they don't believe in the people. And the other part of this is they don't want you voting. They don't want people voting. They don't. They hate when people vote. You know, I go back to what my government teacher said. You know, I don't want you to vote. Oh, no, don't bother. Makes my vote stronger. And that's what they're preaching. Voter disenfranchisement.
Back to the good old days. And by the way, I know you're not from this state, but I know a little bit of political history. And it wasn't that long ago that the good old railroads who owned the coal mines controlled this state like a vice.
You mean like the natural gas industry is going to here in a couple of years?
Mm-hmm. I hope you're wrong, but
no, I'm not wrong.
I understand the analogy.
I'm not wrong.
It's pretty accurate.
Let's take a quick break. We're right back to wrap this up. Remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. Also, hungryandhomeless.org. You got a couple of bucks burning a hole in your pocket, that'd be a great place to spend it. Right back.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have a bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You'd say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call them at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you their 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make everything happen!
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Only 13 minutes until the end of the unemployment extension. I think the pumpkin's going to shrink. I don't think the Republicans are going to come around. I think they're going to stick it to you. I think they're going to stick the working class of this country, as they've always done. Look, are you really surprised? I'm not. I'm not surprised by it at all. But it does really go to show where they are. And I look at some of their groups, some of these way out crazy groups, like this Bill Wilson guy, who's the president of Americans for Limited Government. What he's really saying is we want ineffective government. We want weak and useless government so that corporations can roll over them. What he said today was, quote, Senate Republicans should block everything that doesn't include everything. They should block everything that doesn't include everything, which means they should block any piece of legislation that does not include either permanent or two-year extensions of the income tax, estate tax, capital gains tax, and dividend tax rates. If Senate Republicans allow any of these pieces to be cut up, they will never be made permanent, nor will they be extended. So again, you know, I listen to the Republicans talk. I listen to the Tea Parties, of which this guy's probably one. I know Americans for Limited Government were one of those people out on the fringe. What are they concerned with? They're concerned with taxes for the wealthy. The high rate income tax, the estate tax, the capital gains tax, the dividend tax. That's all that they're concerned with. And who gets that money? Certainly not you and me. Not you and me, man. Amazing stuff. Anyway, you know, as we said the last week, no clips. Yep. It's now officially dead. Officially dead. You know, first it was John Kyle who killed it. Now it's dead because the Senate today rejected a plan that would impose a 2-year moratorium on federal earmarks for lawmakers' pet projects. You actually had a handful of Republicans who voted against the moratorium, surprising, and you had a handful of Democrats who flipped over and voted for it. Those are your conservative Democrats. Surprisingly, Russ Feingold voted to ban the earmarks. I was surprised about that. But it's now dead, so the Tea Party people now have cover. Because really, I mean, it was one of their campaign pledges, and now they've got cover. Oh, those nasty Democrats, they wouldn't let us do it. And that's what this was about. You know, it was another one of those political statements where they go, oh, you know, yeah, we want to do that, yeah, yeah. When they know there's no way in a cold day in Haiti it's ever going to happen, but they can. It's their campaign thing. And I don't know if you saw, there was a KDKA in Pittsburgh had an exclusive interview with Dan Honorato, and he said he had no regrets. And I'm going, really? No regrets? None? Not one? What's nothing? Like, you know, losing? That isn't a regret? You know, maybe you could have done one thing differently. Maybe not that sign with your name on it. I mean, I regret that for you. But the article went on to say that, you know, he may run, you know, for something else. Attorney General, maybe, take up, you know, Corbett's sloppy second there, or Auditor General, because Jack Wagner, I guess, is being term limited. And I think Jack Wagner is a fabulous Auditor General. You know, one of those guys who, you know, that's the calling. And again, these insane term limits. Here's a guy who's damn good at his job. And now because of, we gonna have us some term limits, we can't have that guy back. So we're hampering our government. And that's the other thing that drives me nuts about. I get this. My dentist and I go through this all the time. And my dentist is probably the last guy I really want to argue with about politics right before he sticks that sharp stick in my mouth. But we still do. Because every time I walk in, he goes, well, term limits. And I go, get out of here with your term limits. All term limits are going to do is going to put lobbyists fully in charge. Anyway, this morning on the Don Imus radio program, Senator Trader Joe Lieberman said that his favorite shows are Fox Business and generally Fox. Fox generally, anything Rupert Murdoch owns. So, you know, pretty much a big sloppy wet kiss to Rupert Murdoch. And again, you know, I look at Trader Joe and I go, you know, really? Really, Trader Joe? When they were one of the first people out on the track to get you scalped in 2000. Really? That's your guy now? I cannot wait for this guy to go down. And fast. In flames.
I think we have to wait, another 2 years at least?
12. He's done. He's done. Stick a fork in him. But, and yeah, I got to be honest. And tomorrow, I think I'm going to try and get a guest to talk about the Comcast, NBC Universal merger and some of the ridiculous nonsense that's going on around this thing. I'm telling you, we let this go through. Comcast is going to be a monster and something we're going to have to really deal with. If we allow this to go through, and I'm afraid we're going to. I'm afraid that, you know, we might be just crazy enough to say, okay, go ahead. Let's go and done do it. And our last story for the night, I don't know if you saw this, John Boehner and Eric Cantor today called the dismantling of an exhibit in the Smithsonian's National Portrait Gallery after they learned that it contained a video of a Jesus statue with ants crawling on it, as well as works of art with strong sexual themes. Titled Hide and Seek, the exhibit is slated to run from October 30th through February 13th. The conservative website CNSNews.com first alerted the two Republicans to the filth. Boner spokesman Kevin Smith said Smithsonian officials should either acknowledge the mistake and correct it, or be prepared to face tough scrutiny beginning in January when the new majority in the House moves in. So, basically, you know, if that's not a threat, I don't know what is. Basically saying either you do what we want you to do, or we are going to strip you of your funding. And get ready for this, because the strong arm right wing, they're feeling their oats right now. You know, they're feeling frisky. Have you ever seen Tom Corbett's little his symbol? And I guess I now have a question. Since Obama came up with his little symbol, does every politician from now on have to have their own symbol? Kind of scary stuff to me, because his symbol is really, really scary. It's one of those things that makes you go, really? Really scary. I mean, it looks like an eye, but with a real dark kind of, this real dark kind of undertone to it. It kind of freaks me out. But, you know, I guess that's the point of it. What scares me about him is he's, take a look at this one here. Look at that, Jake. Isn't that scary? It's like an eye, and it's constantly watching you, but it's the Capitol, so you know that the man is looking down on you. And it says, Governor-elect Corbett, Harrisburg, PA, and it's got the little Capitol dome with these rays shooting off of it. And it looks like something, you know, one of those really strong-arm eye guys watching you. It scares me. And I guess that's the point. He also announced his transition team. Basically, every corporation in the state now has a seat at the table, and I think there are two labor people. So, good luck on that. Anyway, December 18th through the 24th, going back to it again. It's important that you mark this on your calendar. It's the big event. We are going to be doing our Hungry and Homeless for the Holidays. Jake and I will be there to take your goods. If you can afford to bring us a can of corn or lima beans if you have to, please, we'd prefer a case, you know, maybe a cart full. That'd be nice. We've had that in the past. We've had folks come over with a whole cart full of stuff and say, here you go, help someone who needs it. And we're hoping for more of that this year. We are going to have our truck out at the giant parking lot. We're working on a couple of companies to try and get us a truck, you know, maybe a little PR for them, which is a nice thing, so that we will be spending our time all cuddled up in our own individual cardboard, you know, refrigerator boxes. I had to emphasize cuddled up in our own boxes. I don't want anybody getting any weird ideas. All of it will then be on Ustream. You can watch it at therickSmithShow.com. We'll probably have it up at hungryandhomeless.org as well. But it's going to be a great time, and I think we're going to get out and meet a bunch of folks, and it's going to give us the opportunity, and I think we're going to have a great time. Thanks for being here. Appreciate you listening. We will see you tomorrow night.
It's coming from the wind. You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
They're stealing down on Wall Street and in Washington, too. You know, it makes me wonder, what's a guy on Main Street to do? I've always tried to be.